Radio FUBAR. Radio FUBAR beyond all recognition. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the new greatest thing on the internet, Studio FUBAR.
Does internet porn know you're cheating on it?
With your hosts, the loud one, Matt Reaver.
His mind brain is permanently rejecting his real identity!
Peter Johnson.
I love that I have an erection that didn't involve homeless people.
But for obvious reasons, we call him Pete. Mr. Producer.
I'm spooning a Barrett 50 cal. I could kill a building.
And the only person who can put up with all of this, Mr. Producer's wife, Tink.
Ugh, it's like my heart's being gripped by the icy fingers of some terrifying ghost of honeymoon future.
Oh.
What's up, everybody?
Hello. Hold on.
What? Your headphones aren't plugged in again?
No, they're plugged in.
Why is this only giving me so much sound?
I don't know.
Oh, well. We'll figure it out later, I guess.
Just fuck with it.
Well, that's what I'm doing. You know, when you try new things.
New and exciting things. Sometimes they're strange. Yeah. Sometimes you end up covered in semen.
Yeah. That's pretty much where I'm at now. Anyway, so how was your week?
Oh, I actually, okay. This is actually one of those, I actually have a story about this. So it's not funny or anything. It's just kind of, it's kind of funny. So I got a call from someone out, a customer for work, right? And this person's first name was spelled Q-I, right?
Right.
Which, if you've ever played Scrabble or have a little bit of inkling of the any of the Asian languages, it's actually pronounced Chi. And when I said this to her, she was completely floored. She was like, in 23 plus years of me being in this country, there is
nobody that ever
has ever said
right.
It properly. And I was like, how, what? Like, I sat there and just, I was like, I don't, this is like, it's not.
I don't get it.
I don't get it.
I got the sticky finger of unlubed dildo.
Again?
Again. Well, this one wasn't too bad. They call me up Monday night.
Uh-huh.
And they say, hey, can you pick up a load where you're at? Which is good because there's no deadhead.
Yeah.
Or no empty.
Yeah, I know what deadhead means.
And can you be in Fargo Wednesday morning? Yeah, no problem.
Yeah, I got you.
Well, I get up there actually Tuesday evening.
Uh-huh.
Go and I deliver Wednesday morning. And then the next load they send me is down near Minneapolis, which is like a 4-hour deadhead. So I'm like,
yay. Yeah.
Well, it pays good. So I'm like, all right, get to booking.
Yeah.
Get about an hour down the road and I say, hey, turn around and go back to Fargo. We got a load for you up there. So
are you fucking kidding me?
Right. So so I turn around, and the place that I ended up having to pick up at is literally 3/4 of a mile from where I unloaded.
Oh, so if they would have just told you, hold on for a few minutes.
Right.
I swear to God, sometimes he's fucking people.
Well, anyway, so I go in there, I walk up, and the guy says, I don't have a load for you.
Oh, my God. It's another one of these.
Yeah. So I give him, you know, my number. And then he goes, okay, I found the load, but now I'm going to lunch.
No, you fucking come back here and you give me the goddamn paper. Like, that's what I would have said. It's like, no, fuck your lunch. Unless it's a union thing, and then it's
It's a union
thing. Yeah, unfortunately, don't get to say that.
Yep. So
because unfortunately the you have the union that would bitch about it, and then you'd have they'd mandatory report it to the federal government. And the FLSA comes into effect and all that stupid nonsense.
Right. So, so I'm not happy by this point.
Yeah.
Then I'm like, you know, maybe I should throw this on a scale because that's a pretty heavy load.
How much was it over?
It wasn't over. I was exactly 80,000 pounds. However,
what was the fuel situation?
I only had half a tank of fuel.
Yep. I knew that was where it was going. I was like,
which is fine. But the problem is I've got a fixed fifth wheel, so I couldn't move weight anywhere.
You couldn't readjust
it. I was over axle on both my drive tires and the trailer tires. So
that
I had
sucks.
To drive. And this is Wednesday morning or Wednesday afternoon by this point.
Yeah.
So we're in the middle of what truck drivers lovingly like to call the 72-hour federal harassment period.
Okay.
That was this week, where they have this big push, like everybody gets inspected.
Mm-hmm.
Which means I can't go anywhere near a scale with this load.
You gotta go. You gotta go run some side highways,
right,
and shit.
which actually isn't that hard from Fargo to here.
Yeah.
It was coming to Milan.
Yeah.
But it adds about 45 minutes. It's about 45 extra minutes.
Yeah.
Not that
That's
big.
That's not terrible.
I'd rather take the extra 45 minutes
and not deal with, what is it, like $4,000 or $5,000 worth of fucking fines that come with that
exact.
Shit?
Exactly. Well, so, but basically, if they would have given me that load right away, and I could have got over there in the morning to load it before he went to fucking lunch,
mm-hmm,
I could have actually made it all the way here.
Yeah.
But as it was, I had to stop in bumfuck Minnesota and then drive the other 4 hours down, which, yeah.
Yeah. Oh, DOT regs?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I ran out of hours.
That sucks. Was it 10 hours?
Like 11 hours of driving, 14 hours total of working.
Okay.
So, like, all of that time that I sat there and wasted trying to get loaded, and all of that time that I drove and then had to turn around, all of that counted against my 14-hour
That fucking
clock.
Sucks.
Because once you start for the day,
you're on.
14 hours later, you're done.
Yeah.
Of that, you can drive 11 hours.
Okay.
You know, but if it takes you 6 hours to get loaded,
well, look at that.
That extra time eats into your drive time.
Yeah. Nah. That's fucking stupid.
Well, no, it's actually...
I understand the regs on that, but...
It makes sense if you're a long-haul driver.
Yeah.
But if you're a regional driver like me, a couple of loads a day when you factor in unloading, loading, dropping, hooking, all that kind of stuff, I don't ever get to drive 11 hours a day.
Yeah.
Although I did going up there. I drove exactly 11 hours. I ran out of hours on the off ramp to the truck stop that I was going to.
Now the question is if you'd have gotten pulled over, would they have nailed you for it, or been like, I'm getting, or would it have been, no, nah, I didn't think they were that
no,
anal about
I'd
that.
I'd have been like, I'm literally going right there.
Right there. I'm parking right there,
yeah,
not 100 yards.
Yeah. So what I did is, you know, I got the e-log in the truck now.
Yeah.
So it hit zero when I was waiting for the light to change,
yeah,
so I could make the turn.
Yeah.
So I'm like, okay, off duty. Or while I was sitting there at their light, because I can drive up to a mile or up to 20 miles an hour and it won't change over to
on
driving.
Yeah.
Or actually I changed it to on duty, not driving.
Yeah.
Because that doesn't count against my drive. You can actually work longer than 14 hours. It's just once you hit that 14-hour point, you can't drive anymore.
Yeah.
For that day until,
yeah,
you've had a 10-hour break.
Yeah.
So I creeped into the 15 miles an hour, pissing everybody and their mother.
I'm pretty sure that's not the... Have you ever seen someone else do that?
Oh,
like,
yeah. Oh, yeah.
They're just creeping into the fucking truck stop.
Yeah. Yeah, and, well, and the reason why they put that into the e-log is because, you know, like driving around a shipper.
Yeah.
You know, that kind of thing. You
yeah,
know,
they're not going
to
try.
From one side of the lot to the
other. They're not
going to
nail
like
you to that, yeah.
Right.
So that, it's one of those ones that, yeah, it doesn't get you with that. That's
right.
Cool.
But
that's hilarious.
The yeah, that took up all that time.
Fuck them. Fuck the people behind you.
Well, luckily, I mean, it was maybe from making the turn at the light to the entrance to the truck stop was maybe 200 feet.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So yeah, get fucked, people, if they get pissed off about that. That's really like,
right.
I'm
probably,
not breaking federal law, so go fuck right. yourselves.
I probably wouldn't have been able to get it up over 20 miles an hour anyway.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So. I got you. Yeah. Yeah.
All right. So Pete's here now. Hey, Pete.
Hi.
I always appreciate the...
I'm here for like 10 minutes while the cornbread's baking.
The yeah. brevity of the of the thing.
Yeah.
I would ask Pete how his week was, but it was pretty much World of Warcraft, I'm guessing.
I don't know.
No, just battling corporate America.
Or tanks.
Yeah.
Battle of Tanks or whatever that game is.
It's called World of Tanks.
Fighting of tanks. For unemployment, looking for jobs.
Yeah.
Donating plasma again, that's always a treat.
Hey, you know, I've done it.
I don't begrudge anybody for doing it. I choose not to.
I've done it, you know.
Not that I'm afraid.
And when I can't possibly tell people what my address or where I've worked before anymore, I start playing video games.
Yeah.
Oh, that's the eighth time I've filled out. Thank goodness for Google Chrome doing autofill. Otherwise,
yeah.
Well, it doesn't do it for the job stuff for security reasons or your social or anything like that, but...
Like address and
describe name. Why you were fired.
Medical. You got a minute?
Cut, paste.
Yeah, that's one of those ones you put in a notepad and just.
Oh, if you give too long of a reason, they don't even fucking look at you. Yeah. If they see like more than four words there or two words there, they're like, done.
Medical.
Don't even care.
There you go. Yep.
So I either put to be discussed or medical.
Yeah. Why were you fired? The voices in my head.
Yeah. Well, let me tell you a little story here.
Back in 1975. Wow.
It was the heydays of the Eisenhower administration. When a little man decided he was going to marry my mother.
Yeah, it's like, wow.
After a while, it causes an existential crisis where you're actually looking at every form going, what have I done to lead up to this point? They're really fucking putting me on the spot. Or when they absolutely require you to do all of your job history.
Oh, I hate that.
And you're
that.
Sitting there like, fuck, it was 98, and God dang it.
Well, I have to do that every time I go to a new job trucking. You have to go back 10 years. You
know? Yeah.
And It's interesting.
Yeah. What's interesting is when, like, you're the first 5 or 6 years of your working career were retail temporary jobs and stuff like that. So you put it on an application. You're like, yeah, I worked from Best Buy from August until February. And they look at, like, 6 months. And I'm like, it's temporary. Yeah. It was seasonal work. Shut up.
Actually, what I loved on mine was trying to account for the military time.
Yeah.
Because, you know, they ask you the same typical questions. Name of company, United States Marine Corps. Address, Pentagon, Washington, D.C. I did this once on one application. Hold on. Name of supervisor.
The
William
president.
Clinton.
William Jefferson Clinton. Yeah.
Phone number, the White House. The 202.
Good luck getting to him. Can you call them?
Yeah. Would you believe I got that job?
Yeah. The correct answer is, can we call them? Yeah, if you can get a hold of him.
Yeah.
If you can talk to Bill Clinton, go for it. Enjoy.
But I'm like, what do you put there? I'm like, supervisor, Staff Sergeant Brubaker. How do I get a hold of him? I got no fucking idea.
Yeah.
Or it's 10 years of temporary work, so you know the only people they're going to have it is corporate. So then you have to look up the corporate number for work employment, and it's 10 years old. And you're like, are they even going to go that far back, or are they just fucking with me right now? Is it to see how much shit I can take on the application?
Oh,
probably.
Oh, yeah. A lot of the stuff on these applications anymore is the same way it was when I did my security clearance in the Marines. It's not that they're going to look. in depth.
They want to make sure you're not an idiot.
Well, they want to see if you're telling the truth, basically.
Mm-hmm. Telling the truth and that you're not an idiot.
Yeah.
That's basically what they're looking for.
Do you have any debt? Yes.
Well, speaking of cornbread.
Yeah. Do you have any debt? Yes. How much? A lot.
A sum. I don't fucking know. Some.
Because a lot of guys will try to lie on that.
I don't understand. Like, why would... Now, that's a very valid question. I understand why they asked that. Which, it's like, it's if you got a lot of debt, that's leverage that somebody can hold over you and use that.
As blackmail.
As blackmail, yeah. Or, not even blackmail, they can say, hey, we will give you X millions of dollars if you fucking do that. And it was like, oh yeah, I got tons of debt. They're coming to get me. Here you go.
Yeah, but to be honest with you, it's more that they're checking on your trustworthiness.
Yeah, oh yeah.
You know, they're not going to make a huge deal about some debt.
Yeah. They just want to know whether or not they you're going to tell them about
it. If you have it, you know, do you have debt? Yes.
Yes.
Where is it? Here.
And I got these credit card debt here. I got this here, and
you know,
and
you know, and then why were you know? Because the secret level of clearance that I initially had, it was basically one of those cursory checks. Is this guy giving us the truthful answers?
Yeah. Yes.
Okay. Then later, when I had to get the top secret code word type clearance,
yeah.
That's when they actually start calling everybody.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's one of those ones we might have to, yeah.
I mean, not only do they call the people that you put down on the security clearance, but they call people that those people mention.
Yeah.
That's how you end up hearing about people, you know, hearing, you know, like FBI people calling like your third grade teacher.
Yeah. Yeah. I had a friend that was in the Navy that was in the sub corps. And
oh yeah, yeah. That's there. Yeah,
yeah,
yeah.
I didn't get a call, but one of our other friends that we were in high school with did, because he was going for the subs, and I was like, okay. And I got told him, I was like, oh, yeah, the FBI said, hey, as a special agent so and so, we got a couple questions for you based upon the research review here. Do you know this person? They say the name, like, yeah, absolutely, yeah. We got a couple other questions they told us about, and you just got to answer those questions, and then hang up. That's the end of it.
Yeah.
It's not too intrusive, and I understand exactly why you're getting put on.
No, it's not. They're checking trustworthiness, you know, because you need a secret clearance for to even be on a sub, really.
Yeah.
And then a lot of the jobs on a sub require top secret clearance. Yeah. You know, you're... sonar operators, the nuclear workers,
I bet the engineering crew on the fucking submarine is like, all of them are just like, not only are they brilliant guys, but they're certified like top secret fucking level clearance. Yeah. 'Cause you're working on the nuclear reactor in the U.S. submarine corps.
Yeah,
you're party to some things that you should probably never tell anybody else.
Yeah. At least not until you get out and you want to get a job working in a nuclear power plant.
Right, you know? Yeah. or GE or any.
Which is why
a
lot of those guys take those jobs, you know.
Yeah, that's part of it.
But the schooling is so long that you actually have to sign a 6-year enlistment contract to take a job as a nuclear technician. Plus your ASVAB scores and your schooling score have to be off the chart.
Yeah,
because if there's one place they don't want you fucking up in the military, it's on a nuclear
submarine, especially working with the engine.
Exactly,
the power set fucking submarine,
or on an aircraft carrier with the nuclear.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah,
you know. We can deal if you aim a gun at the wrong place and you take out a few people.
Yeah,
we can't really deal with it if you fuck up the nuclear reactor and take out a country.
Yeah. Or, yeah.
Or close down shipping lanes for 1,000 years.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
But it amazes me the number of nuclear accidents they've had in the military between us and Russia.
Oh, I bet. If I remember, are the numbers worse for Russia, I'm assuming?
Well, yeah.
Of course.
That's more because of their...
That's actually something I kind of want to know. Because of course, when we were going through the conversion over to nuclear power for the submarines, like, they were way behind technological-wise, and they were putting these fucking nuclear reactors on these fucking things.
Oh, this is a pretty fuck. This is a lot longer list than holy shit. All right, I've had to scroll for like 30 seconds. all right, 1940. 1940s. 1942. Of course, this is all countries here.
Okay.
You know, June 23rd, 1942, Leipzig, Germany. Then Nazi Germany.
Mm-hmm.
Steam explosion and reactor fire. Shortly after the Leipzig L4 atomic pile, work done by Werner Heisenberg.
I'm assuming that's the guy who made the Heisenberg uncertainty principle. Yep.
And Robert Doppel demonstrated Germany's first steps of neutron propagation. The device was checked for a possible heavy water leak. During the inspection, air leaked in, igniting the uranium powder. The burning uranium boiled the water jacket, generating enough steam pressure to blow the reactor apart.
Oh, geez.
burning uranium power scattered throughout the lab, causing a larger fire at the facility.
Jeez. I remember when we were watching that couple, it was on last week, Memorial Day weekend when I was over here. We were watching when they were talking about dropping the bomb on Hiroshima and Nagasaki. I was sitting when they were loading the fucking bomb up there and they weren't wearing like the lead suits or anything like that. I was like, what the fuck? I was sitting there screaming at the TV, and you remember this. I was like, why aren't you wearing like protective gear around that? And I was like, wait, no, it's 1945. Never
mind. Yeah, they didn't know
they
that.
Had no fucking idea what right. that shit was doing.
Yep. August 21st, 1945, Los Alamos.
Yeah, that's the one where he, yeah.
Accidental criticality.
Oh. Oh, I know what that means. The fucking core exploded.
No, it doesn't explode.
Oh,
a tungsten carbide brick was dropped onto a plutonium core, inadvertently creating a critical mass. The brick was quickly removed, but the guy was critically irradiated, you know, just from radiation.
He's dead. Because, quick news flash, we don't understand how nuclear weapons actually work.
But it took him 3 weeks to die.
Yeah, oh yeah. Radiation poisoning is one of the worst ways to die. But, like, that's on the list of, like, next to, like, getting caught on fire type of... But for those that don't know, nuclear weapons, they take about a grapefruit size of plutonium or whatever.
Just slightly under critical mass.
Yeah. And then surround it with a bunch of explosives and shrinks that thing down to about the size of a golf ball.
That's one way to do it.
Yeah.
That's the Manhattan Project way of doing it.
Yeah.
They don't do that anymore.
Oh, I was reading the book of Some All Fears and they kind of outlined that. If that's the man, if it's, I don't know. I'm not super up to date.
The safer way to do it.
Yeah.
Is that they take a chunk of whatever.
Yeah.
Just slightly below critical mass.
Yeah.
And then they take another chunk and put it over here at the end of a rifle.
Yeah.
And then when they want it to go off, they shoot the little chunk into the big chunk,
which
creating a critical mass, which goes boom.
Oh, okay. See, I did not, yeah. I have to keep put that's going in my brain now. Didn't know that, as I said... What I was reading that information off of was the book Some of All Fears made by, I believe, Tom Clancy?
Yep.
Yeah.
May 21st, 1946, Los Alamos.
Yeah.
Accidental criticality.
Again?
Yeah. And this I've read about and seen reenactments of, and this was just a scientist being cocky.
Ah.
While demonstrating his technique to visiting scientists at Los Alamos, Canadian physicist Lewis Slotin manually assembled a critical mass of plutonium. A momentary slip of a screwdriver caused a prompt critical reaction. Slotin died on May 30th from massive radiation poisoning with an estimated dose of 1,000 rads. Who received doses as high as 166 rads survived, yet three died within a few decades from conditions from the thing. In those two incidents, both of them, both of the criticality masses, which happened 9 months apart, they were working with the same bomb core, which became known as the Demon Core.
Yeah.
Which was eventually utilized for the Able Test detonation of July 1st, 1946.
Nice. They're like, well, this fucking thing's not going anywhere near the bomb that we're dropping over there. So that's one of those ones I'm completely okay with superstitions, because like if people screwed it up twice, I don't want it going anywhere near it, just to make sure it's not mad at us at that point in time.
Yeah. February 13th, 1950, Pacific Ocean off the coast of British Columbia, non-nuclear detonation of an atomic bomb.
Okay.
U.S. Air Force B-36, serial number blah, 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 was flying a simulated combat mission from Eielson Air Force Base near Fairbanks, Alaska, to Carswell Air Force Base in Fort Worth, Texas, carrying one weapon containing a dummy warhead. The warhead contained uranium instead of plutonium. After 6 hours of flight, the bomber experienced mechanical problems and was forced to shut down three of its six engines at an altitude of 12,000 feet. Fearing that severe weather and icing would jeopardize a safe emergency landing, the weapon was jettisoned over the Pacific Ocean from a height of 8,000 feet. The weapon's high explosives detonated upon impact with a bright flash visible. All of the 16 crew members and one passenger were able to parachute from the plane, and 12 were subsequently rescued. The Pentagon's summary report does not mention if the weapon was later recovered.
Oh, okay.
April 11th, so 3 months later, in 1950, loss and recovery of nuclear materials. 3 minutes after departure from Kirkland Air Force Base in Albuquerque, a U.S. B-29 carrying a nuclear weapon, four spare detonators, and a crew of 13 crashed into a mountain. The crash resulted in a fire, which the New York Times reported as being visible from 15 miles, because it had just taken off.
Yeah, you know, it's so, fucking jet fuel. Yeah.
The bomb's casing was completely demolished, and its high explosives ignited upon contact with the plane's burning fuel. However, according to the DOT, the four spare detonators and all nuclear components were recovered. A nuclear detonation was not possible because while on board, the weapons core was not in the weapon for safety reasons. All 13 crew members died.
Yeah, that's one of those ones. If that core was in that weapon, that would have blown up.
Well, that's why they don't.
Yeah,
do that. Actually, it probably wouldn't have. Three months after that, July 13th.
The '50s were scary. Apparently,
Lebanon, Ohio, non-nuclear detonation of atomic bomb. A U.S. Air Force B-50 aircraft on a training mission from Biggs Air Force Base with a nuclear weapon flew into the ground, resulting in a high explosive detonation, but no nuclear explosion. 2 weeks later, August 5th, 1950, non-nuclear detonation of atomic bomb. A U.S. B-29 bomber with a Mark IV nuclear bomb on board, flying to Guam at the request of General Douglas MacArthur. So this is right at the beginning of the Korean conflict,
yeah,
or the Korean War. Experienced malfunctions with runaway propellers and landing gear retraction during takeoff and crashed while attempting an emergency landing.
What the hell is a runaway propeller?
Runaway.
What? Oh, just spinning and they can't stop it? Like, I don't... Oh, it shot off. No. So it's literal. It's actually literal. It's not like a technical...
It ran away.
It shot off the fucking plane. Okay.
In the resulting fire, the bomb's high explosive material exploded, killing 19 people from the crew and rescue personnel. Brigadier General Robert Travis was among the dead. 3 months later, we're talking about...
nuclear weapon mishaps.
Yeah, military nuclear weapon mishaps. We're reading them all.
Yeah.
And thus far, there's been what? Six?
Yeah.
In 1950?
Yeah.
One, two, three, four. This is the fifth in 1950.
Well, I do understand. It is an emerging technology at the time. It was, we'd only been able to do this for about 5 years at this point. Mm. So.
November 10th, 1950. Quebec, Canada, non-nuclear detonation of an atomic bomb.
Go figure.
Returning from one of several U.S. Mark IV nuclear bombs secretly deployed to Canada, a U.S. Air Force B-50 had engine trouble and jettisoned the weapon at 10,500 feet. The crew set the bomb to self-destruct at 2,500 feet and dropped it over the St. Lawrence River. The explosion shook area residents and scattered nearly 100 pounds of uranium used in the weapons tamper.
Wow.
The plutonium core, obviously, was not
in the weapon. Yeah.
March 1st, 1954.
Oh, okay.
So they managed to go 2.5 years without
a bomb.
That's a good sign on the wall. We've had 385 days since the last nuclear weapon mishap. Guess what? One more day, we get that pizza party, guys. Got to meet our safety quota. Taking this shit serious after General blah, blah, blah died.
Bikini Atoll, Republic of the Marshall Islands, nuclear test accident.
Oh, so that was... No, okay.
We didn't just drop one on the Bikini Atoll.
Okay.
No, we
fucking glassed that shit.
for a good 10 years, that was our testing site.
Yeah.
During the Castle Bravo test of the first deployable hydrogen bomb, a miscalculation... Not exactly.
I forgot to carry the one.
You know,
shit.
I hope to God it was a scene of like one of the scientists running. No, don't do it. Don't blow it up.
You know what that?
Man, this fucked up.
You know what that reminds me of? Remember about 6 years ago,
the Mars lander,
yep. And they came out. And they said, we forgot to convert inches to centimeters.
Yeah, fucked it all up. Right into the fucking Mars surface.
Swenson, if I've told you one time, no, you move it to the tenths, not the hundredths. You imbecile. Why did we hire you?
A miscalculation.
My dad's a general.
A miscalculation resulted in the explosion being over twice as large as predicted.
I can see where that would be a problem, I guess. But
the problem is that back in the day, they didn't know about radiation as much as they do now. Yeah.
Sullivan, does that look like 500 or 50 to you?
Well, no.
Let's just go with 500. You know these guys, they always want more.
they would have observers like...
Oops. That's right. They got guys with fucking binoculars and shit.
In a ditch.
About three... A couple of miles away
yeah. Watching this.
Again.
Because they wanted to see the impact on this, you know.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Can I say one of the greatest travesties in military history has nothing to do... And I'm sorry. This is just my opinion. Didn't involve soldiers or sailors or anybody losing their lives necessarily. It's when they blew up the fucking Saratoga in those tests. Quite possibly the most awesome battleship the U.S. ever... Like, built it in like 1930, and it served all the way through World War II. And then they blew it up in a fucking nuke test. that would be one of the best museum exhibits around. Like, this was literally like a ship that shouldn't have survived World War II, but it did. Well, we better blow it up in a fucking test.
Yeah, with a total explosive force of 15 megatons of TNT. Of the total yield, 10 megatons were from fission of the natural uranium tamper, but those fission reactions were quite dirty, producing a large amount of fallout. Combined with the much larger than expected yield and an unanticipated wind shift, radioactive fallout was spread eastward onto the inhabited Rongelap and Rongerak atolls. These islands were not evacuated before the explosion due to the financial cost involved, but many of the Marshall Island natives have since suffered from radiation burns and radioactive dusting and similar fates as the Japanese fishermen.
Send them a gift basket of aloe cream. They're going to need it.
Yep.
Send them some food. That should fix the problem. food? Really? I don't think they need... I think the complete... They need a doctor.
Right.
They need a fucking doctor.
And then here again, they managed to go a year and a half.
Well, Jesus.
November 29th, 1955, Idaho. Idaho. Partial meltdown.
Oh.
Operator error led to a partial core meltdown in the experimental EBR-1 breeder reactor, resulting in temporarily elevated radioactive levels in the reactor building and necessitating significant repair.
This was a full bore meltdown.
5 months later.
Another meltdown.
They didn't listen.
March 10th, 1956. Over the Mediterranean Sea, nuclear weapon lost.
Just, we're away.
Oh, shit. I knew we left one. We left with one. I know it. But
a U.S. Air Force B-47. On a nonstop mission from MacDill Air Force Base in Florida to an overseas base, descended into a cloud formation at 14,000 feet over the Mediterranean in preparation for in-flight refueling, and vanished.
Aliens got it. Well, the explanation.
The plane was lost while flying through dense clouds, and the core and other wreckage were never located.
Aliens.
Something weird about that. They got to be able to detect that shit.
Well, this was 1956.
I know, but even today, we had to have found it by now.
Well, we still got a nuclear weapon lost somewhere. I'm sure we'll get to that later.
Yeah.
But they dropped one in the fucking Gulf of Mexico right outside of New Orleans, and it's still sitting there somewhere in the muck somewhere.
Some shrimp boat captain is going to make bank.
Hey, you want to go find a nuclear warhead?
No.
They've been trying. 10 months later.
Oh, almost a whole year.
Almost a whole year. May 22nd, 1957, Kirkland Air Force Base, non-nuclear detonation of an atomic weapon.
Okay.
A B-36 ferrying a nuclear weapon from Biggs Air Force Base to Kirkland Air Force Base dropped a nuclear weapon on approach.
Guy looks like he's wearing a Russian hat. Quick, drop the bomb!
Ah, shit, we forgot to put the core in it. Fuck. I'll kill him. Yeah.
July 28th. So, just over a month later.
it's narrowing. The gap is narrowing. We've gotten so lucky we started fucking around with
it. Atlantic Ocean. Weapons jettisoned and not recovered.
Oh, jeez.
A U.S. Air Force C-124 aircraft from Dover Air Force Base, Delaware, was carrying three nuclear bombs over the Atlantic Ocean when it experienced a loss of power. For their own safety, the crew jettisoned two nuclear bombs, which were never recovered.
Just the casings of it, just the housing of it, right? Not the core. They kept the, of course, the. I'm assuming the part that blows up.
Who knows?
The part that blows the fuck up, like they were saying, the high explosive part of it.
Yeah.
Oh, fuck off. Get out of here.
September 11th, 1957.
Ah!
So just over 2 months later, the original September 11th. Yeah. Rocky Flats Plant, Golden, Colorado. Fire release of nuclear materials. A fire began in a theoretically fireproof area.
I like the wording on that. Theoretically. It's allegedly fireproof.
Allegedly.
Inside the plutonium processing building, in a materials handling glove box, and spread through the ventilation system into the stack filters.
It's gone in the ventilation system.
The fire quickly spread to the plutonium as various safety features failed. As the containment ability of the facility became compromised, plumes of radioactive smoke were sent up high into the air. The fire raged inside the building for 13 hours over the night before firefighters could eventually extinguish it. In the aftermath, DOE officials and Dow Chemical officials who ran the facility did not admit to the extent of the catastrophe or the radiation danger to local officials or the media. Knowledge of the extent of the damage and containment were kept from the public for years. After the fire, plutonium was detected 30 miles from the plant.
Whoops. Whoops.
Heavily contaminating the region, including a school 12 miles away.
Ah!
As well as Denver. An independent group of scientists conducted off-site testing 13 years later found plutonium contamination in areas in nearby rocky flats to be 400 to 1,500 times higher than normal, higher than any ever recorded near such an urban area, including Nagasaki.
It's such...
Wow! Where we actually dropped a fucking bomb!
It really prickles your paranoia when they say normal levels of radioactivity. It just, those are normal levels of radioactivity. What is that? Can you give me a number and walk around like, oh, okay.
29 September. So
18 days.
18 days later.
It's like the fucking kaiju, man. It's just happening sooner and sooner.
Finally, the Russians fuck up.
So this is all of us.
Bullshit. This is the first time they fucked up we know about.
That's true.
Well,
that is a very big country. Hold on. You can hide a lot of shit in there.
Hold on. This is the first time they fucked up after they stole the plans.
I gotcha.
Before that, you know, they were trying to do the shit on their own, and, you know, then there's, oh, maybe we should put water in this. Oh, okay, you know.
Yeah.
Oh, quarter does not fit. Must get the bigger hammer.
Yeah.
We will never speak of this.
Well, they had an explosion and a release of nuclear material.
Ooh.
A cooling system failure at the Mayak nuclear processing plant resulted in a major explosion and release of radioactive material. A large area was subjected to radioactive contamination, and thousands of local inhabitants were evacuated.
Whoops.
October 8th through the 12th.
Oh.
1957. So just over a week later.
The Russians are like, well, fuck, this fucked up. And you wonder why. Nuclear radiation is like, oh, God.
England.
Oh.
Reactor core fire.
Oh, the Brits got into it now.
Technicians mistakenly overheated windscale pipe number one during an annealing process to release Wigner energy from graphite portions of the reactor. Poorly placed temperature sensors indicated the reactor was cooling rather than heating.
What?
That's an engineering issue.
Fuck.
The excess heat led to the failure of a nuclear cartridge, which in turn allowed uranium and irradiated graphite to react with air.
Ooh.
The resulting fire burned for days, damaging a significant portion of the reactor core. About 150 burning fuel cells could not be lifted from the core, but operators succeeded in creating a fire break by removing nearby fuel cells. An effort to cool the graphite core with water eventually quenched the fire. The reactor had released radioactive gases into the surrounding countryside, primarily in the form of iodine-131.
Ooh. Ugh.
Milk distribution was banned in a 200-square-mile area around the reactor for several weeks.
I don't think that's going to be enough. I don't think that's enough. I think that's long enough.
Give that a month or two.
I think that's long enough.
Maybe, you know, get new grass.
Let that batch go. Just scrape that shit up and let it go.
Working at the cow wash.
October 11th, 1957. So 3 days after that one started.
Oh, jeez.
This is all when they're making those like corny school movies.
Duck and cover.
Even nuclear energy is the way of the future, and it's absolutely safe and clean.
Yeah.
Oh.
Poof!
Still clean. It's still clean.
Don't drink that milk. Another.
Ignore little Timmy on the back too. Yeah. Let's just.
I like the milk. Good.
Another aircraft burning. A B-47 aircraft crashed during takeoff.
Is his face numb after drinking that glass of milk? God damn it. Sorry.
A B-47 aircraft crashed during takeoff after a wheel exploded, one nuclear bomb burned, and the resultant fire.
Mommy, my throat looks are glowing!
3 months later, January 31st, 1958, in Morocco.
Put
some frost on your flakes. Sorry. Irradiated milk.
See, this is another one of those. During a simulated takeoff.
Oops. Simulated. So like they
I just want you to get halfway down the runway and then stop.
They weren't actually lifting off the ground.
A wheel casting failure caused the tail of an Air Force B-47 carrying an armed nuclear weapon to hit the runway.
Why is it armed? Why is it armed on
this
takeoff?
This is the first time it's armed.
Yeah. That means the fucking core's in that.
Why would you arm it on a practice takeoff? Just up the ante on the pressure?
All right. Hey, this thing, hey, you fuck up, and this thing's going to...
Well, this is the time when they were doing... I'm brain farting on what they called them, but where we had armed nuclear weapons up in the air all the time.
Oh, okay.
During the MAD.
Failsafe?
Yeah, well, that kind of... Yeah. Rupturing a fuel tank and sparking a fire. Some contamination was detected immediately following the accident.
Well, at least it didn't blow up.
6 days later.
Oops!
Savannah, Georgia.
Oops!
Nuclear bomb lost.
There's some redneck sitting on a plutonium. That's scary shit. That's scarier than anything else.
Yeah.
You remember the movie Joe Dirt?
Yeah. He finds the fucking bomb and like the first thought he's
Let's shoot bottle rockets at it.
It's like, that's what we're dealing with. It's down in Savannah, Georgia. And I don't even know if we want to continue on with this. Because there could be some morons listening to this. And then they're like, well, we gotta go find this fucking bomb.
It really makes you wonder if the tooth loss down there is due to bad health care, bad hygiene, or it's just the radiation.
A United States Air Force B-47 bomber jettisoned a Mark 15 Mod Zero nuclear bomb over the Atlantic Ocean after a midair collision with an F-86 Sabre. Boink. During a simulated combat mission...
We really need to stop simulating things with live weapons. We really need to...
The Sabre pilot ejected and parachuted to safety. The Air Force claimed the B-47 tried landing at Hunter Air Force Base in Georgia three times before the bomb was jettisoned at 7,200 feet near Tybee Island in Georgia. The B-47 pilot successfully landed in one attempt only after he first jettisoned the bomb. A 3-square-mile area near Wausau Sound was searched for 9 weeks before the search was called off. The bomb was searched for again in 2001 and not found. A group of investigators in 2004 claimed to have found an underwater object which they think is the bomb.
Ah, God damn it.
Stop trying to find bombs, man. Writing this down over there.
I'm gonna give it back. I'm gonna give it back to the federal government. I found your weapon for you.
Mid-Atlantic.
Five weeks later, a U.S. Air Force B-47 bomber was flying from Hunter Air Force Base in Savannah, Georgia.
No, I think I found our problem. It's that fucking Air Force base in Savannah, Georgia.
You should have invaded Georgia.
No, I think it's the B-47.
Yeah, that could also be it.
Let's get out of these B-series really quick.
Yeah. Well, I got the B-52s that were designed.
Was flying to England in a formation of 4 B-47s on a top-secret mission called Operation Snow Flurry to perform a mock bombing exercise.
Stop doing... Pretend with real shit.
The flight navigator bombardier climbed on 10 feet long, 7,600-pound, 30-kiloton Mark 6 nuclear bombs to check the locking harness.
Oh, he's straight out just...
he Slim Pickens did, didn't he?
He Slim Pickens the fucking bomb.
Jumped up and down. Oh, yeah, that seems about right. Anyone else hear that click?
He accidentally pushed the emergency release lever.
No, he did straight out.
The bomb hit the bomb bay doors, forcing its way out, and went into a 15,000-foot free fall. The high-explosive detonator went off after it hit the ground 6.5 miles east of Florence, South Carolina, in Mars Bluff, creating a 70-foot-wide crater. 30 feet deep. A nearby house was destroyed and several people were injured. It doesn't say if he went down with the bomb.
Ah, he's like, oh, come on. Like, that's the most important part of that story. Was he on the bomb when it went through the fucking bomb doors?
Yep.
And all the bomb could think was, oh, not again.
There's a lot of people listening to the show right now going, what? Why are they
why are those three laughing? I don't get it. I don't understand.
3 months later, Oak Ridge, Tennessee.
Oh, the Oak Ridge boys.
Accidental criticality.
Oops.
A supercritical portion of a highly enriched urinal nitrate.
Urinal nitrate?
Yeah. Was allowed to collect in the drum, causing a prompt neutron criticality in the C1 wing of building blah, blah, blah.
Oh, so it's a big pile of fucking uranium dust.
Uh-huh.
That collected. Oh, critical mass.
It's a big way to say we lit fire to the pencil shavings.
It's estimated.
And it burned my house down.
It's estimated that the reaction produced 1.3 times 10 to the 18th fusions.
Wow.
So 1.3 times 10 with 18 zeros after that.
Yeah.
For 5 seconds, the sun was like, God dang it, Earth, turn off that light.
Yeah. 8 employees who were in close proximity to the drone during the accident.
Well, I lost my nut sacks. My nuts are gone.
Received neutron doses ranging from 30 to 477 rems. No fatalities were reported.
Wow. That's surprising. Wow. That's surprising.
Hey. Fusion is cleaner, but holy shit.
Hey, they've got a new record here. 6 months later.
Oh, shit.
Woo. That's a gap.
Yeah. Texas, non-nuclear detonation of a nuclear bomb. A U.S. Air Force B-47 bomber.
Yep. Was it from Savannah, Georgia again?
No, this is in Texas.
Ah,
developed fire shortly after takeoff and went down with a nuclear weapon on board at an altitude of 1,500 feet. The detonation of the high explosive material in the bomb created a crater 6 feet deep and 35 feet wide. 3 crew members escaped. 1 was killed.
We need to stop giving Southerners access to nuclear weapons. Because the majority of these are happening in the South.
3 weeks later, Chennault Air Force Base, Louisiana.
Yeah.
Non-nuclear detonation of a nuclear bomb. A U.S. B-47 bomber.
I think you are. I think it's moving from correlation to causation.
Stop teaching rednecks to fly.
With a nuclear weapon on board, developed a fire while on the ground.
So they shot to
these banjo strumming bitches were not supposed to fly. That's evident. Let alone with nuclear weapons. Holy shit.
Just about a month later, Los Alamos, New Mexico, accidental criticality. During chemical purification, a critical mass of a plutonium solution was accidentally assembled.
I love the wording accidentally assembled. Oh, shit. What? Frank, I think I made it go like generate a bunch of nuclear radiation.
Did you see a flash?
Someone
all right, who farted?
Yeah. A chemical operator named Cecil Kelly died of acute radiation sickness. A June 1961 Journal of Occupational Environmental Medicine printed a special supplement medically and analyzing this accident. Hand manipulation of critical assemblies was abandoned as a matter of policy. So basically manually putting shit together.
Yeah. Right.
3 weeks later, U.S. Air Force Pacific Base location remains classified.
Okay. I'm cool with that.
Nuclear weapon on fire. A grounded U.S. Air Force.
What year are we up to?
1959.
Fuck me!
A grounded U.S. Air Force F-100 Super Saver.
Oh, it's not the B-47.
Supersonic
flight. You can't win them all.
Bomber with a nuclear weapon loaded developed a fire at one of the U.S. Air Force Pacific bases after its external fuel tanks were dropped and exploded during a practice alert.
Well, I think we need to stop practicing. Apparently, they...
We're really on that page now. Stop sending live nuclear weapons into simulations. It's really stupid.
Barksdale Air Force Base, where Louisiana.
Oh, back in the fucking South again.
Limited contamination. A U.S. Air Force C-124 transporting two nuclear weapons without fissile cores, or fissile cores, crashed and burned during takeoff. The high explosive detonators did not go off. The wreckage area experienced limited contamination. 5 months later, September 25th, 1959, Washington, the state.
Okay. I was going to say, like, D.C.? Oh, God.
A U.S. Oh, hold on. We need to start keeping count of these. I think we're at three. A U.S. Navy P-5M anti-submarine aircraft with an unarmed nuclear depth charge.
That's a thing? Like, we're gonna fling a nuclear weapon.
They developed nuclear artillery. Okay.
Oh yeah, you were telling me about this, the shell that would ignite further than the gun
problem
could fling
was
it.
Yeah, the problem was is that the explosion was further than it could shoot it. So
your head right. hurt over there.
All right, so I think we're at number four on these now. Yeah. Lost nuclear weapon.
Yep.
Fell into Puget Sound near Whibley Island, Washington. The nuclear weapon was not recovered. So we got four of them floating around.
Four and one possible that they found.
No, that's counting that one because they haven't actually dug it up yet.
Yeah, yeah. I said one four and one of the four is possible.
3.5 weeks later.
Oh,
Jesus Christ.
We're just losing we're just losing nuclear.
Well, maybe if we didn't send them up with every fucking plane. Maybe if every goddamn training, hey, we're going to go do an exercise with the Boy Scouts of America where they're looking for lost people in the woods. Oh, you're going to need like six nuclear weapons for that. Yeah. Fucking put them on trucks and shit and drive around the woods.
Hardensburg, Kentucky.
Well, back in the South.
A U.S. B-52F.
Oh. Oh, we've upgraded to the B-52 now.
Yeah. With two nuclear weapons collided at 32,000 feet with a KC-135 refueling aircraft.
It's like Fire Marshal Bill was their safety instructor.
Let me tell you something.
Let's say you're cruising around at 15,000 feet.
Fuck.
Month and a half.
You gotta have a bad
month
time.
And a half.
Month and a half later. November 20th, 1959, Oak Ridge, Tennessee. A chemical explosion occurred.
Back to Oak Ridge.
Almost got that pizza party.
During contamination of processing machinery, or during decontamination of processing machinery in the radiochemical processing plant. The accident resulted in the release of about 15 grams of plutonium. Or, as they put it in here, of Q-239.
It's enough to put some kick in the brownies, let me tell you.
Space modulator.
Yep. You can just snort that shit, right?
Yeah. All right. I'm going to start skipping the damaged nuclear warheads because if it didn't release shit, we don't need to know about it.
Yeah.
Because we're into the 60s now.
Yeah.
Barents Sea, this is October 13th, 1960, release of nuclear materials. A leak developed in the steam generators in a pipe leading to the compensator reception of an ill-fit K-8. While the Soviet Northern Fleet November-class submarine was on an exercise, while the crew rigged an improvised cooling system, radioactive gases...
That's the one from K-19.
...leaked into the vessel, and three of the crew suffered visceral radiation injuries resulting... No, that's not it.
Oh. So there was another ship that did...
All right.
We didn't...
January 3rd, 1961. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, we didn't capture that one.
Yeah.
During a maintenance shutdown, this is in the nuclear reactor testing station in Idaho, The SL-1 experimental nuclear reactor underwent a prompt critical reaction, causing core materials to explosively vaporize.
I would love to have read that report. Explosively vaporized.
Waterhammer, estimated at 10,000 pounds per square inch, struck the top of the reactor vessel, propelling the entire reactor vessel upwards over 9 feet into the air.
Hit the button. What button? The one on the left.
One operator
wrong
who had,
button, dude.
One operator who had been standing on top of the vessel.
It's like a nuclear lowrider.
Hold on. Was killed when a shield plug impaled him and lodged in the ceiling.
I'm so sorry. That's funny. That sounds so gruesome and terrible, but so fucking hilarious.
What if one of those operators who were operating those the water hammer was like just hated that guy? Ah, fuck. Ah, it's fucking Steve on that thing again. Get him.
Two other.
Hey, Bill. Funny story. I know you ate my lunch.
No. Actually, no. We're getting to that.
My sandwich.
No. We're getting to that here.
Okay.
Two other military personnel were also killed from the trauma of the explosion. One of which had removed the central control rod too far. That was the guy whose sandwich had been eaten.
Yeah.
My sandwich. It had a moist maker. The name was clearly on the bag, Tom.
January 24th, 1961, physical destruction of a nuclear bomb, loss of nuclear materials.
Yeah.
March 14th, 1961, in Yuba City,
B-52
crash.
We're not even past 61.
That's why I said
we're like 19 oopsie daisies, right. And we're not even out of a decade.
July 4th, 1961, coast of Norway near meltdown. The Soviet hotel class submarine K-19.
There we go. That's the one.
Suffered a failure in its cooling system. Reactor core temperatures exceeded 1,500 degrees, nearly enough to melt the fuel rods, although the crew was able to regain temperature control by using emergency procedures. The incident contaminated parts of the ship, some of the onboard ballast missiles, and the crew, resulting in several fatalities. The movie offers a controversially fictionalized story of these events. They made it almost a whole year.
It's kind of fiction when you consider Harrison Ford's Russian accent, but otherwise.
Yeah.
Yeah, they made it almost a whole year. May 1st, 1962 in the Sahara Desert.
Pawlowski.
Accidental venting.
Slipped on some tea.
Almost as good as Sean Connery.
Accidental venting of an underground nuclear test.
Whoops.
I got to blame the French on this one. The second French underground nuclear test, codenamed Barrel, took place in a shaft under Mount... Titty Tory top what? Okay. T-A-O-U.
Who's running it? Donkey Kong? Operation Barrel.
Toriert near in Ecker.
Just drop off the last four letters of that word.
All right. Anyway, this is in the middle of the Sahara Desert.
Ecker.
E-C-K-E-R. It's in the Sahara Desert. Due to improper sealing of the shaft, a spectacular flame burst through the concrete cap. And radioactive gases and dust were vented into the atmosphere. The plume climbed to 8,500 feet.
That'd have been cool. That would have been cool to see. Minus the fact there's heavy, hardcore radiation shooting out of that. That'd have been...
Ooh.
And radiation was detected hundreds of kilometers away.
Yeah. As I said, minus the radiation, that would actually be really fucking cool to watch happen.
About 100 soldiers and officials, including two ministers, were irradiated.
Oops.
The number of contaminated Algerians is unknown.
You can still see their tents glowing at night.
They almost made it a year. That happened May 1st, 1962, April 10th, 1963.
I got a feeling the streak's going to end, though. It's going to be like 40 years of just stupid.
Well, you also have to remember that in the 50s, we were that was like 5 or 6 years after we invented the nuclear weapon. and they were still trying to fucking fix that.
You know what's bullshit about that excuse, Matt?
It's a nuclear fucking weapon.
Is that all these places have to know about each other?
No, hold on. They watched what one of these damn things could do
right
in 1945. They knew what they were dealing with.
Oh, yeah.
You're talking a five-year gap of oopsie-daisies and then a whole decade of it, and you got to realize these facilities that all have nuclear material, they got to be on some sort of list that they all know each other. So if somebody fucks up in, say, Savannah, Georgia, they're going to hear about it in fucking Washington.
Yeah.
Yep. They're going to know, oh, we better not, you know, send out a fucking live nuke on a training exercise. We're going to do it anyway.
Or drop a graphite
Hold on. Here, we lost an entire nuclear reactor.
Oh. What? What?
We just lost it?
Yeah, we just lost it.
Oh, I thought you meant it blew up or something.
No, we lost it. Yeah, well, no. Once I tell you the name, you'll figure it out. Submarine USS Thresher. Sinks about 190 nautical miles east of Cape Cod, Massachusetts, due to improper welds allowing in seawater, which forced a shutdown of the reactor. Poor design of its emergency ballast system prevented the ship from surfacing, and the disabled ship ultimately descended to crushed depth and imploded.
And that's the one that, was it Howard Hughes or Bob Ballard helped recover?
I don't know. I think Howard Hughes was dead by 63, wasn't he?
Not sure. But there's a bunch of lost subs and shit from Russia and the United States, and both Howard Hughes and Bob Ballard.
Well, that's the only nuclear sub that we've
lost. That whole National Geographic movie, like The Hunt for the Bismarck. And you're like, oh, that's really cool. They went looking for that. Like, nope, it was a cover. Bob Ballard was looking for a missing Russian sub. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, this is the only nuclear sub that we've lost. The Russians, however. Anyway.
Yeah.
January 13th.
1976 is when Howard Hughes died.
Okay, so he was still around. January 13th, 1964, Maryland, accidental loss and recovery of thermonuclear bombs.
1964.
All right, so we're getting there. At least they're not blowing up now.
Almost a year later, 8 December 1964, in Indiana, a fire and radioactive contamination. A B-58, you know, burned, taxiing. Anyway. Oh. Release of nuclear materials, January 65. An accident in Lawrence Livermore National Laboratory released tritium gas.
Okay.
Thanks, Jordy.
A month after that, a Lenin Soviet nuclear icebreaker. Or Lenin, nuclear icebreaker, suffered a loss of coolant accident.
That one's still in service, though, I think.
After being shut down for refueling, the coolant was removed from the number 2 reactor before the spent fuel had been removed. As a result, some of the fuel elements melted and deformed inside the reactor. This was discovered when the spent elements were being unloaded for storage and disposal. 124 fuel assemblies, or 60% of the total, were stuck in the reactor core. It was decided to remove the fuel control grid and control rods as a unit for disposal. They were placed in a special cast, solidified, stored for 2 years, and dumped in the ocean.
Oh, so it's just...
So they took a nuclear reactor and just dumped it in the ocean.
And dumped the core in the fucking ocean. Yeah.
Yeah. 10 months later...
It pushed him out of the black hole, too.
Yeah. Rocky Flats, Golden, Colorado, fire and exposure to workers.
Come on, let's get to Chernobyl. I can't wait
about
for that.
3 months later, loss of a nuclear bomb, so we're at 5 now.
Yeah.
Coast of Japan, a U.S. Navy A-4E Skyhawk aircraft with one B-43 nuclear bomb on board fell off the aircraft carrier Ticonderoga.
Whoops. Whoopsie daisy.
They're reporting choppy seas today and high winds. So be sure to secure all the aircraft.
Into 16,000 feet of water while the ship was underway from Vietnam to Yokosuka. The plane, pilot, and weapon were never recovered.
Oh, so there was a dude in that plane?
Man overboard. Fuck it.
Whoops.
There's got to be a way to get out of
it. I was just thinking about this. It's like, how long would it take you to realize that you just fell off the fucking ship and hit the eject
button? This is not bad. I am definitely falling into the water. Not even the eject button. There's got to be an emergency hatch release or something.
Yeah.
There's got to be. If it fell onto him or something like that, I understand. I'm not critiquing the pilot.
Well,
what if
the plane flipped upside down?
I'm saying, like, if that happened, like, it, but still.
Yeah.
Wow. You figured you'd have time to get out of that.
Yeah.
Maybe the impact made him unconscious.
Knocked him out or something like that. That could have been. Yeah.
You do fall like 50 feet into water in an aircraft. Yep. That's probably going to hurt shit.
So just over a month after that, accidental destruction, loss, and recovery of nuclear bombs. A B-52 ran into a KC-135 tanker while refueling.
They need to get better pilots. They need to stop running and shit. They're playing bumper planes up in the fucking sky with nuclear war.
I'll give them some credit on that. That refueling procedure is not as easy as they make it look.
Oh, I know.
Sometime in 1967, Lenin, a Soviet nuclear icebreaker, suffering a second accident, a cooling system leak which occurred in 1967 shortly after refueling. Finding the leak required breaking through the concrete and metal biological shield with sledgehammers. Once the leak was found, it became apparent that the sledgehammer damage could not be repaired. Subsequently, all three reactors were removed and replaced by two OK-900 reactors. Somehow, I don't think you want to put OK as the model number of your nuclear reactor.
Everything's okay. Situation normal.
We're fine. How are you?
How are you? What happened out there? How are we on your reactor?
Who are you? What's your identification number? We had a slight reactor melting down, and we sledgehammered through to the reactor.
Just give it a minute.
Everything's fine now. Yeah. Everything's okay.
Give us a minute to lock it down. January 21st, 1968, another B-52 crashed. Loss and partial recovery of nuclear bombs.
What do you mean by partial?
We'll have to figure out if we have to count these or not. A fire broke out in the navigator's compartment of a US B-52 near Thule Air Force Base in Greenland. The bomber crashed 7 miles from the airbase, rupturing its nuclear payload of 4 hydrogen bombs.
Oh, the good ones.
You just imagine it. Like, yo, Tom, what? Does that look like a 6 or an 8?
The recovery and decontamination effort was complicated by Greenland's harsh weather. Contaminated ice and debris were buried in the United States. Bomb fragments were recycled by Pantex. The incident caused outrage and protests in Denmark, as Greenland is a Danish possession and Denmark forbade nuclear weapons.
Fuck them. Right. It happened.
Just about 5 months later.
Oh, jeez.
Loss of nuclear reactor and two W-34 nuclear warheads. I was wrong. The Thresher wasn't the only U.S. sub.
The boomer subs?
The USS Scorpion sank while en route from Rota, Spain to Norfolk, Virginia.
Yep.
The cause of sinking remains unknown. All 99 officers and men on board were killed. The wreckage of the ship, its S-5W reactor, and its two Mark 45 torpedoes with W-34 nuclear warheads remain at the bottom of the seafloor in more than 3,000 meters of water. So that's 6 and 7.
That's actually one of those that nobody knew about until the Freedom of Information Act.
Yeah.
Like, that was a big secret. Well,
it was the same with the Thresher.
Yeah.
Let's see. 2 days later. Loss of coolant, radioactive contamination, and nuclear fuel damage in location unknown. Another nuclear sub, K-27.
Yeah.
Suffered severe problems with a nuclear coolant reactor, spending some time at a reduced power. Blah, blah, blah.
That's a Russian sub.
Down. Let's see. 6 months later, August 27th, Russia, nuclear power excursion. A reactor power excursion.
Sounds like a fucking picnic.
with nuclear material.
While in a naval yard for repairs, Soviet Yankee-class nuclear submarine K-140 suffered an uncontrolled increase in the reactor power's output.
What are the Soviets doing with a Yankee-class?
Yeah, I was thinking the same thing when I read it. One of the
they're giving us the finger is what that is.
One of the reactors activated automatically when workers raised control rods to a higher position and power increased to 18 times normal, while pressure and temperature levels in the reactor increased to 4 times normal. The accident also increased radiation levels aboard the ship. The problem was traced to an incorrect installation of control rod electrical cables.
So what happened was is they pulled the control rods out of the core, and the core is like, oh, fuck!
Right, but what happened, you know, those workers didn't screw up. Whoever hooked up the system screwed up.
Yeah, I gotcha. They weren't trying to move the control rods to stop the reaction from that.
Right.
And then when they hit the button, it
All right, May 11th, 1969. They made it 6 months there. Colorado, plutonium fire and contamination at Rocky Flats again. They almost made it a year. April 12th, 1970, loss of a nuclear submarine.
Oh, nice.
The Soviet November-class attack submarine K-8 sank during salvage with 52 soldiers on board after suffering fires in two compartments simultaneous. Both reactors were shut down. The crew attempted to hook a tow line, but failed.
Tow line to what?
Hook a tow line to the sub to tow it.
Oh, okay.
All right. December 18th, 1970, accidental venting of a nuclear explosion. This is in Nevada this time, so it's our fault, not the French. In Yucca Flats, the 10-kiloton Baneberry weapons test of Operation Emery detonated as planned at the bottom of a sealed vertical shaft 900 feet below the Earth's surface. But the weapon's energy cracked the soil in unexpected ways, causing a fissure near ground zero in the failure of the shaft stemming and cap. A plume of hot gases and radioactive dust was released 3.5 minutes after ignition and continued for many hours, raining fallout on workers within the training site. 6% of the explosion's radioactive products were vented. The plume released a bunch of numbers of radioactive material, including a bunch of iodine-131, and a high rate of noble gases, or high ratio of noble gases. After dropping a portion of its load in the area, the hot clouds' lighter particles were carried to 3 altitudes and conveyed by winter storms in the jet stream to be redeposited heavily as radionuclide-laden snow.
Nuclear winter!
In Northeast California, and to a lesser degree in Northern Nevada, Southern Ohio, and some eastern sections of Oregon and Washington. The three diverging jet stream layers conducted radionucleotides across the U.S. to Canada, the Gulf of Mexico, and the Atlantic Ocean.
And this is shit that we did to ourselves.
Sorry, Canada.
Just think about that for a second. We're going to launch this. We're going to fire off this nuclear warhead in the ground. What's that going to do?
Some 86 workers at the site were exposed to radioactivity, but according to the DOE, none received a dose exceeding site guidelines, and similarly, radiation drifting off-site was not considered to pose a hazard.
Okay, fair enough. There are, yeah, I got you.
In March 2009, Time magazine identified the Baneberry test as one of the world's worst nuclear disasters.
Compared to Chernobyl?
It says one of.
Okay, I was gonna say.
Hey, they almost made it a year. December 18th, 1970 to December 12th, 1971.
Oh, nice.
They spilled irradiated water.
Wow.
Another year after that, Pawling, New York, contamination. 1975, so they went 3 years, contamination.
Oh, here we go. Yep.
Spill of radiated water, explosion, contamination of worker, loss and recovery of a nuclear warhead.
Just one. Fuck you, Bill.
Spill of nuclear fuel, spill of radiated water. Now we're into the 80s.
All right, so we're spilling this shit now. We're not just blowing it up. All
right. Yeah. We learned. We figured out.
Now, if only somebody didn't fuck it up.
When are we going to get a 3 Mile
September,
Island?
Hold on. September 18th, 1980. At about 6:30 p.m., an airman conducting maintenance on a U.S. Air Force Titan II missile at Little Rock Air Force Base, Launch Complex 3747 in Southside, Van Buren County, just north of Damascus, Arkansas, dropped a socket from a socket wrench, which fell about 80 feet before hitting and piercing the skin of the rocket's first stage fuel tank, causing it to leak.
God. Oh, my God. That's got to suck.
The area was evacuated about 3 p.m. on September 19th. The hypergolic fuel exploded. The W-53 warhead landed about 100 feet from the launch complex's entry gate. Its safety features operated correctly and prevented any loss of radioactive material. An Air Force airman was killed and the launch complex was destroyed.
So one of the fucking ICBMs blew the fuck up in the cradle. That's great.
August 8th.
All I can think of is
the scene from A Christmas
Story where he's watching all the nuts go off and he's just like,
you can tell.
Fudge. Yeah.
You can tell they've gotten better, though, because in the 70s, there were only about a dozen. In the 80s, there's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. In the 90s, there's one, you know.
Yeah.
August 8th, 1982, while on duty in the Barents Sea, there was a release of liquid metal coolant from the reactor of the Soviet Project 705 Alpha class. I think they use liquid sodium.
Okay.
To cool their... Anyway. The accident was caused by a leak in a stem generator. Approximately 2 tons of metal alloy leaked into the reactor compartment, irreparably damaging the reactor such that it had to be replaced. It took 9 years to repair the sub.
Wow.
January 3rd, 1983, the Soviet nuclear-powered spy satellite Cosmos 1402 burns up over the South Atlantic.
Fucking nuclear solar, man. It's fucking free.
That's 83. They had it, but I don't know how efficient it was.
August 10th, 1985, about 35 miles from Vladivostok, the Soviet Echo-class submarine K-431 suffered a reactor explosion, producing fatally high levels of radiation. 10 men were killed, but the detonated cloud of radioactivity did not reach Vladivostok, according to the Russians.
Right. Everyone okay? No radiation.
Oh, shit. October 3rd, 1986, 480 miles east of Bermuda, the Soviet Yankee 1-class submarine K-219 experienced an explosion in one of its missile tubes, and at least 3 crew members were killed. 16 nuclear missiles and 2 reactors were on board. Soviet leader Mikhail Gorbachev privately communicated news of the disaster to the U.S. President Ronald Reagan before publicly acknowledging on October 4th. 2 days later, the submarine sank in the Atlantic while under tow. So there's 16 more missiles.
Hey, Russia, stop building fucking submarines.
So 16 plus 7, 23. There's 23 lost nuclear weapons in the world so far.
Yeah.
October of 1988, a nuclear trigger assembly facility in Rocky Flats, Colorado. 2 employees and a DOE inspector inhaled radioactive particle, causing closure of the plant. Several safety violations were cited, including uncalibrated monitors, inadequate fire equipment, and groundwater contaminated with radioactivity.
Morons.
Georgian is in the country, Georgia. This is in 1997. Georgian soldiers suffered radiation poisoning and burns. They were eventually traced back to training sources, abandoned, forgotten, and unlabeled after the dissolution of the Soviet Union.
Whoops.
A cesium-137 pellet in a pocket of a shard jacket, which put out about 130,000 times the level of background radiation.
Now that's a number that I can understand. Background radiation. I know what that means. Going back to where you said it was like the acceptable levels of radiation, I don't understand what that means.
All right. February, and this is the last one, February 2003 in Oak Ridge, Tennessee Y-12 facility. During the final testing of a new saltless uranium processing method, There was a small explosion followed by a fire. The explosion occurred in an unvented vessel containing unreacted calcium, water, and depleted uranium. An exothermic reaction in the vessel generated enough steam to burst the container.
Nice.
The small explosion breached its glove box, allowing air to enter, ignite some loose uranium powder. Three employees were... Anyway.
Oh, wow.
They were fined $82,500 for that incident.
So 23 weapons.
That we know of.
That we fucking know of.
And I wasn't even counting any lost...
Partially lost
Russians,
one. Yeah.
You know, ones that may have been from those other subs that sunk.
Yeah. Wow. I wonder if Al-Qaeda has that information. Not that I'm going to give it to them. I'm just saying, I wonder if they've ever tried. Then they'd have to figure out how to go get those fucking things. And I think we're okay with them sitting at the bottom of the ocean.
Oh, I found the United States military nuclear incident terminology.
Oh, cool.
We've all heard of Broken Arrow from the movie.
Yeah.
The United States Department of Defense Directive 5230-16 Nuclear Accident and Incident Public Affairs Guidance.
Okay. We need to look up some of the nuclear training videos from the '50s off of YouTube. Those are going to be
detail a number of terms for internally, externally, including press releases, report nuclear accidents. Terminology: pinnacle.
Pinnacle what?
You remember the movie Broken Arrow? Mm-hmm. These are those kind of code words that the United States military uses for nuclear incidents. So if you're ever watching TV and you hear one of these codes, Pinnacle is a chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, reporting flag word used in the United States National Command Authority structure. The term Pinnacle denotes an incident of interest to the major commands, departments of defense, and National Command Authority in that it generates a high level of military action, causes an actual reaction, affects international relationships, causes immediate widespread coverage in news media, is clearly against the national interest, and affects current national policy. All of the following reporting terms are classified pinnacle, with the exception of bent spear, faded giant, and dull sword. Bent spear refers to incidents involving nuclear weapons, warheads, components, or vehicles transporting nuclear weapons that are of significant interest but are not categorized as pinnacle. Bent spear includes violations or breaches of handling and security regulations.
Bent spear.
A recent bent spear example is the August 2007 flight of a B-52 bomber from Minot Air Force Base to Barksdale Air Force Base, which carried 6 cruise missiles with live nuclear warheads.
Oh.
Broken arrow. Broken arrow refers to an accidental event that involves nuclear weapons, warheads, or components, but does not create the risk of nuclear war. These include accidental or unexplained nuclear detonations. I get accidental, but unexplained?
Yeah, how is it unexplained is the question.
Non-nuclear detonation or burning of a nuclear weapon, which we had plenty of those in the 50s and 60s.
Yeah.
Radioactive contamination, loss in transit of nuclear asset with or without its carrying vehicle.
With or without?
Well, like when they jettisoned it and shit.
Jettisoning of a nuclear weapon or nuclear component or broken or a public hazard, actual or implied. Nuck flash.
Nuck flash.
It's an acronym. Nuck flash refers to detonation or possible detonation of a nuclear weapon which creates a risk of an outbreak of nuclear war. Events which may be classified pinnacle nuck flash include accidental, unauthorized, or unexplained nuclear detonation or possible detonation, accidental or unauthorized launch of a nuclear-armed or nuclear-capable missile in the direction of or having the capability to reach another nuclear-capable country. North Korea is trying to do that shit.
Yeah.
Unauthorized flight of or deviation from an approved flight plan by a nuclear-armed or nuclear-capable aircraft with the capability to penetrate the airspace of another nuclear-capable country. Detonation of unintended objects or unidentified objects by a missile warning system or interference experienced by such a system or related communications that appear threatening and could create a risk of nuclear war. This term is a report that has the highest precedence in OPREP 3 reporting structure. All other reporting terms such as broken arrow, empty quiver, etc., while very important, are secondary to this report. Basically, Nutflash is saying either something has happened or it's going to happen shortly.
We got one of the fucking ICBMs flying at Russia, and we don't know why. that's a Nutflash, guys.
Emergency disablement refers to operations involving the emergency destruction of nuclear weapons.
Okay.
Emergency evacuation refers to operations involving the emergency evacuation of nuclear weapons. Empty quiver refers to the seizure, theft, or loss of a functioning nuclear weapon.
Ooh.
Fated giant refers to an event involving a military nuclear reactor or other radiological accident not involving nuclear weapons.
Okay.
And dull sword is a term that describes reports of minor incidents involving nuclear weapons, components, or systems, or which could impair their deployment. This could include actions involving vehicles capable of carrying nuclear weapons, but with no nuclear weapons on board at the time of the accident. This also is used to report damage or deficiencies with equipment, tools, or diagnostic testers that are designed to use on nuclear weapons, blah, blah, blah.
That's interesting. I still say we go find one of the old videos on YouTube. That should be pretty good. Yeah. That would be...
We'll talk for a minute while I'm doing
yeah.
that.
I've never actually seen one of these. Not or heard any of them or anything like that.
What do you mean training, though?
Not training. I'm talking like the ones like the duck and cover ones, all of those those ones.
Oh,
I think Disney made one. Disney did a lot of propaganda stuff.
Dum, 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 diddle, dum, dum, diddle, dum, dum, diddle, dum, dum.
That's really loud.
There was a turtle by the name of Bert, and the turtle was very alert. When danger threatened him, he never got hurt. He knew just what to do. He ducked and cover, duck and cover.
He did what we all must learn to do.
You and you
and you
and you.
Such duck useless information. Because yeah.
Be sure and remember what Bert the Turtle just did, friends, because every one of us must remember to do the same thing. That's what this film is all about. Duck and cover. This is an official civil defense film produced in cooperation with the Federal Civil Defense Administration and in consultation with the Safety Commission of the National Education Association. Produced by Archer Productions, Incorporated. Hey, Bert, come on out and meet all these nice people, please. Oh, all right. We really can't.
You can hear the guy smoking the cigarette slightly away from the microphone.
Danger. This is the way he keeps from being hurt. Sometimes it even saves his life.
Sometimes.
That's why these children are practicing to duck and cover just as you do in your school. We all know the atomic bomb is very dangerous. Since it may be used against us, we must get ready for it, just as we are ready for many other dangers that are around us all the time.
Yeah, like they zoom in on the black kid.
I'm
not even kidding.
Someone is careless.
Like he was center frame. Dangers around us all the time.
We have a fine fire department to put out the fire, and you have fire drills in your school so you know what to do. Automobiles can be dangerous, too. They sometimes cause bad accidents, but we are ready We have safety rules that car drivers and people who are walking must obey. Now,
okay.
We must be ready for a new danger, the atomic bomb.
Okay.
First,
wait, what?
You have to know what
happens when an atomic bomb explodes. I think you skipped a few steps there.
Get ready. It looks something like this. There is a bright flash, brighter than the sun, brighter than anything you've ever seen.
And you're already dead.
If you were not ready and did not know what to do, it could hurt you in different ways.
Run.
It could knock you down.
Run away from the flash. You can make it.
It's only operating at the speed of light at that point.
You're both idiots. I'm climbing in the fucking refrigerator.
And break windows all over town. But if you duck and cover like Bert, you will be much safer. You know how bad sunburn can feel.
Wait, they're on the burns.
A bomb flash could burn you worse than a terrible sunburn. Especially, there is a bright flash, brighter than the...
Like seriously? Like...
We have a fire department that puts out fires. Cars are also dangerous. And so are nuclear bombs.
What? That escalated real
Cars
fucking...
Cars are also dangerous, but we have laws and a system of rules to govern them. We should be ready for atomic bombs. Wait, hold on.
Oh,
yeah, this is getting out of hand. I'm going to back this up because you gotta...
Then they go on to describe something that happens that is brighter than the fucking sun on Earth. It's the same
sun
as a car.
Brighter than anything you've ever seen. If you were not ready and did not know what to do, it could hurt you in different ways. It could knock you down hard or throw you against a tree or a wall. It is such a big explosion, it can smash...
Because that's the thing you really got to fucking worry about in a nuclear explosion.
Or it can embed your shadow into a wall.
Fucking wall.
Okay.
Chin buildings and knock signboards over and break windows all over town. But if you duck and cover like Bert, you will be much safer. You know how bad sunburn can feel.
Here we go.
The atomic bomb flash could burn you worse than a terrible sunburn.
Could. I love how they keep using these plausibles. Like, well,
yeah, it can burn you.
You could get thrown into a tree. It might break some windows around the town, but seriously, is it that bad?
But if you turn yourself into a turtle.
Yeah.
And duck.
And cover.
Especially where you're not covered. Now, you and I don't have shells to crawl into like Bert the Turtle, so we have to cover up in our own way. First, you duck, and then you cover. And very tightly, cover the back of your neck with your face. Duck and cover underneath a table or desk or anything else close by.
I like how this plan has you fusing your fingers at the top of your skull. It's the best plan.
This is a good plan.
You just walk around like this. My flesh boiled together.
You know what they're doing here? They're training these kids to be ostriches. Don't worry. If you can't see it, it can't hurt you.
Why don't you put a paper bag?
I want the first thing those kids to see when the bomb goes off is literally a turtle like walking in front of them and the thing just fucking liquefies. Duck and cover my ass. Just he boils in his own shell and just turns into a puddle of goop and flames. And you're like, ah!
Betty is asking her teacher, how can we tell when the atomic bomb may explode?
Shut up and let Betty talk, you
and
dick.
And her teacher is explaining that there are two kinds of attack. With?
There's two kinds of attack.
How can we tell when the nuclear bomb?
You'll see a bright flash, brighter than the sun.
Hold on, they're gonna.
There's two types of attack.
Hold on. Yeah, this.
Why did they even open their fucking mouth? That's what I don't understand. Like, the next, like, everything before this, okay, they were comforting people. But this part that I can see on the video, why the fuck even open your mouth?
I think this is the Captain Obvious portion of the show.
Yeah. We literally talked about this at the grocery store on the fucking Weather Channel. The hurricane will be hitting the East Coast, somewhere between Maine and Florida.
Yeah.
Why the fuck did you keep talking?
The atomic bomb may explode. And a teacher is explaining that there are two kinds of attack. With warning and without any warning. We think that most of the time we will be warned before the bomb explodes.
The nuclear weapon's going to creep up on you like an Apache.
Boom! I got you.
You just see this picture of like a cartoon nuclear weapon twirling its mustache. They should have done that.
No one expects the nuclear inquisition.
Hey, Bob, what are we going to do?
There are two types of attacks. Those without warning, those with warning, and those where you're already dead. There are three types of nuclear attacks.
They probably should have got the Monty Python boys to do this. It would have been
the animation would have been better, too.
Fuck.
I think that killed Frank.
Then thou wast pull the pin.
Flash is what you shall see, and the flash shall be greater than the sun and the glory of thy God the Lord. And thou shalt duck and cover. Thou shalt not cover then duck, but thou shalt cover then duck then cover. Only upon the flash, but not before.
And completely when the
bomb... And one shall be as of a turtle.
And when the bomb's in the air, that's completely out.
A snail... No. One shall be as a turtle. A snail is right out.
Covering without ducking is right out.
And so is ducking without covering.
I think they could do this, like... They already could, like, the Monty Python boys already covered this with the how to hide video.
So there will be time for us to get into our homes, schools, or some other safe place.
Yeah, let's die at home.
Our civil defense workers and our men in uniform will do everything they can to warn us.
Holy shit.
Yeah, what?
No,
what?
No, I fucking love
our
this.
Our men in uniform will do everything they can to warn us.
Switch out the helmets.
Yeah.
Hey,
holy shit.
The picture that's on the screen, this is the scariest part about this time. You switch out the helmets and tell me those guys aren't fucking Wehrmacht.
Because
they got smokestacks and shit in the background with armbands on and all this other crazy shit. You're like, holy shit, we turn into the fucking Nazis. Yeah.
Be in your schoolyard playing when the signal comes. That signal means to stop whatever you are doing and get to the nearest safe place fast. Always remember, the flash of an atomic bomb can come at any time.
I like how they're all calmly walking.
The nearest safe place is not where the bomb's dropping.
Completely, as far as ways you can possibly get from that thing.
And don't worry, there's only going to be one bomb, ladies and gentlemen. You know, they're not going to drop 3,000 of them.
Yeah, they're not going to fire a bunch of missiles at us with them.
No matter where you may be, you might be out playing at home when the warning comes. Then be sure to get into the house fast, or your parents
as they calmly walk in.
Didn't they cover this in Judgment
Day? If you're
not
close to home when you hear the warning,
the whole fucking LA was just annihilated.
Know where you are to go, or ask an older person to help you. You know the places marked with the S sign? They're safe places to go when you hear the alarm. If there is a warning, you will hear it before the bomb explodes. But sometimes, and this is very, very important.
This is going to be good. This is going to be really good.
Did he really tell me that if there is a warning, I'll hear the siren before?
No, if there is going to be a bomb, you will hear the siren.
No, he said if there is a warning, you'll hear the siren before the explosion.
pack that up. I want to make sure. I want to make sure that's what he said.
Places to go when you hear the alarm. If there is a warning, you will hear it before the bomb explodes.
That's what he's fucking saying.
And this is very, very important. Sometimes the bomb might explode without any warning.
Oh!
Then the first thing we would know about.
So everything I said before this is complete bullshit.
That means duck and cover fast wherever you are.
J.J. Abrams wasn't the first to do lens flare.
Be like Bert. Duck and cover and do it fast. Here are some older boys.
It was a lens flare, that's for damn sure.
Showing what to
you
do.
Can just imagine, like, that
comes when you are not in the classroom.
That Star Wars movie coming this out after this video, just everybody just starts freaking out in the theaters.
It's all the flash!
Be in a corridor. You duck and cover tight against the wall this way.
And let it fall on top of you.
Your face and the back of your neck.
Fuck that! I'm going to watch that. I'm dead.
Try to fall away from windows or doors with glass in them. Then, if the glass breaks and flies through the air, it won't cut
physics
you.
Doesn't work
if you might be eating your lunch when the flash comes.
The only thing higher than this narrator are their trousers.
Because
what's I love up? It. There's just like this dopey kid with, you can tell he's a ginger, and he's just pointing at stuff. He's pointing at the kid on the wall. He's like, now you see what Tom's doing there? He's got his feet in all the wrong position to avoid a nuclear blast. Like, no, you got to tuck the toes, curl them in. Jesus Christ, Tom. It's not the first day.
Then, if the explosion makes anything in the room fall down, it can't fall on you.
Yeah, absolutely can't.
Getting ready.
Those desks are very well made.
We all have to be able to take care of ourselves. The bomb might explode when there are no grown-ups near. Paul and Patty know this.
I need an adult.
And they're always ready to take care of themselves. Here they are on their way to school on a beautiful spring day. But no matter where they go or what they do, they always try to remember what to do if the atom bomb explodes right then. It's a bomb. Duck and cover.
It's a bomb.
Paul and Patty know what to do. Paul covered the back of his head so that he wouldn't be burned. And Patty covered herself with the coat she was carrying. They knew how to duck and cover.
But
they
she's not fully right away ducked, when the so she's came. Goddamn amateur material.
If they had been at this doorway when the bomb flashed, Paul and Patty would have ducked and covered this way, like this girl. Heavy doorways are a good place to duck and cover. She will be safer, too. Here's Tony going to his tub shop. Tony knows the bomb can explode
so
any
you're
time
gonna
of
die
the year,
tomorrow
day or
instead
night.
Of
he's ready for it.
Right now.
Duck and cover. Attaboy, Tony. That flash means act fast. Tony knows that it helps to get to any kind of cover. This wall was close by, so that's where he ducked and covered. Tony knew what to do.
They'll find you
notice
there
how
when
he
you're
keeps
dead.
Moving or from getting up and running. He stays down until he is sure the danger is over.
He's not getting
the man
up there, guy.
Tony is a civil defense worker. His job is to help protect us when there is danger of the atomic bomb.
The fuck is he doing? Not a goddamn thing.
Is he Captain Adam? He's just going to make it all go away?
And cover in the school bus or in any other bus or streetcar.
Because that's a flying
color.
Projectile. You got
don't
a nice
wait.
View of
duck
it as you're flying
the
through the fucking
path.
Air.
Yeah. In the school
the
bus. In the giant fucking oven.
Sundays, holidays, vacation time. We must be ready every day, all the time, to do the right thing if the atomic bomb explodes. Duck and cover. This family knows what to do. Your own family.
I thought I caught some of that. I gotta see some. I gotta see this again.
They're having a picnic. And when they see the flash, they just flip the whole fucking thing up and cover themselves with the fucking picnic blanket.
Helps protect them. Even the newspaper can save you from a bad burn. But the most important thing of all is to duck and cover yourself.
A flammable...
Especially where your clothes
piece
do not
of
cover
fucking
you.
Paper!
No matter where we live.
Oh, the tractor's
going to
flip. I swear to God, that tractor's going to flip.
All the time for the atomic bomb. Duck and cover.
Boom, dead underneath the tractor.
Hold on.
Duck and cover.
You notice that he remembered to set the brake before he jumped off.
You notice
so
that he set the brake before the flash?
Yeah.
Fucking bullshit right there.
He's a
the next important thing to do after that is to stay covered until the danger is over.
That bastard knew he was coming.
Yes,
it's a commie.
We must all get ready now so we know how to save ourselves if the atomic bomb ever explodes near us. If you do not know just what to do,
you moron.
Ask your teacher when this film is over.
Well, hold
discuss
on.
What you could do in different places.
If you don't know what to do at the end of this fucking
older
film, what the point? What was the
do.
Point of this?
But there might not be any grown-ups around when the bomb explodes. Then you're on your own.
Then it's Lord of the Fucking Flies.
Remember
that's
what
what's
do,
happening.
Friends, now tell me right out loud. What are you supposed to do when you see the flash?
Oh, now the turtle's talking.
Duck. And cover. Duck. And cover.
Someone should take this video and put duck. The,
Oh, they put the Deathly Hallows symbols at the end. That's fucking spooky shit.
You know
shit.
What they should do is someone should
I'm dead
take...
I'm fucking serious. Go look at their icon.
That's hilarious. Yeah, I got kind of seen this.
It's just the civil defense with the triangle and the circle.
Yeah.
With a fucking... Voldemort's launching nukes, everybody.
Uh...
He got access to the uranium wand.
I was really hoping to see like the vault symbol, the vault guy from Fallout on there.
I'm a wizard. I just throw fucking plutonium rods at people saying abracadabra. Abracadabra. It takes a while, but
now, this one has decent production values.
No, this is a song.
I think when
it's
you talk
Christmas at Ground Zero.
Have you never heard this before?
While the air raid sirens blare, it's Christmas at Ground Zero. The button has been pressed. The radio just let us know that this is not a test. Everywhere the atom bombs are dropping. It's the end of all humanity. No more time for last minute shopping. It's time to face your final destiny. It's Christmas at Ground Zero. There's panic in the crowd.
Exactly.
We can dodge debris while we trim the tree underneath the mushroom cloud.
Now what they're doing here is they're taking clips from the video we just watched.
Nice.
All the flashes and the ducks and the
Well, big day's only a few hours away now. I'm sure you're all looking forward to it as much as we are.
You might hear some reindeer on your rooftop or Jack Frost on your windowsill. But if someone's climbing down your chimney, you better load your gun and shoot to kill. Levels okay. I'll go out with you and see all the new mutations on New Year's Day. Just seconds left to go. I'll duck and cover with my Yuletide lover underneath the mistletoe.
That's about it, yeah.
It's Christmas at Ground Zero. Now the missiles are on their way. What a crazy fluke. We're gonna We're gonna get nuked on this jolly holiday.
Good old Weird Al. Oh, man.
You'd never heard that before?
No.
Oh, wow.
That was one of my favorite songs.
So many albums, I can't hear them all. Well, I'm sure some people have, but
oh my, that was great. That was almost as good as watching Reefer Madness, dude. That fucking movie is hilarious.
You know?
Oh yeah.
You know how they talk about everything's recorded when you're the president?
Yeah.
You know, Ronald Reagan had a pretty good sense of humor.
Yeah.
This was him fucking around before.
Yeah.
My fellow Americans, I'm pleased to tell you today that I've signed legislation that will outlaw Russia forever. We begin bombing in 5 minutes.
They will outlaw Russia forever.
That was him joking around before a press conference.
Yeah.
They were doing the radio. They were doing the mic check.
Reagan smash.
They were doing the mic check, and the Russians found out about it and actually went on alert for a few hours.
Not any one of them understood more than like four words in English. There's just one like English professor from Russian background. He's outlawing Russia. You can't outlaw Russia, you morons. Yeah.
Well, that's what he said. We're outlawing Russia. We begin bombing in 5 minutes.
Yeah.
Speaking
of nuclear fallout, they actually announced they have the trailer for Fallout 4 available. That's a new video game.
Oh, good.
What city is the apocalypse set
Boston.
In this time? Oh, great.
In this picture, there are 40 people. None of them can be seen. In this film, we hope to show you how not to be seen.
Yeah, this is what you were talking about with the...
Mm-hmm.
This is Mr. E.R. Bradshaw of Napier Court, Black Lion Road, Southeast 5. He cannot be seen. Now, I'm going to ask him to stand up. Mr. Bradshaw, will you stand up, please? This demonstrates the value of not being seen. In this picture, we cannot see Mrs. B.J. Smegma of 13 The Crescent, Belmont. Mrs. Smegma, will you stand up, please?
B.J.
Smegma. This is Mr. Nesbitt of Harlow, Newtown. Mr. Nesbitt, will you stand up, please? Mr. Nesbitt has learnt the first lesson of not being seen, not to stand up. However, he has chosen a very obvious piece of cover. Mr. E.B. Lambert of Homely, the Burrows, Oswestry, has presented us with a poser. We do not know which bush he is behind, but we can soon find out.
Oh, that's right, three bushes.
Yes, it was the middle one. Mr. Ken Andrews of Leighton Road, Slough, has concealed himself extremely well. He could be almost anywhere. He could be behind the wall, inside the water barrel, beneath a pile of leaves, up in the tree, squatting down behind the car, concealed in a hollow, or crouched behind any one of 100 bushes. However, we happen to know he's in the water barrel. Mr. and Mrs. Watson of Ivy Cottage, Warbleston Road, Hull, chose a very cunning way of not being seen. When we called at their house, we found they had gone away on 2 weeks' holiday. They had not left any forwarding address, and they had bolted and barred the house to prevent us getting in. However, a neighbour told us where they were. And here is the neighbour who told us where they were. And this is where he lived. And this is where Lord Langdon lived, who refused to speak to us. And so did the gentleman who lived here, and here, and of course here. And Manchester, and the US Midlands, Spain, China.
See, they would have done it way better. Way better.
Yeah. Anyway, so your new game coming out?
Yeah, it's called Fallout 4. It's a post-apocalyptic world. Yeah. Everybody freaks out about this game. Everyone does. I'm not...
One of those games that lets you kill anybody and it has ramifications and they put a lot of content into it. But yeah.
So that's what I liked about Doom. There wasn't ramifications. If it moved, shoot it.
Yeah. You know,
they didn't have to worry about fucking the hooker to get the, I don't know, STD points to be able to go and...
That's objectification of women.
To go over,
I'm going to need you to check your privilege.
You know, to go over to make sure that I had to spend $10 at the VD clinic in order
to... You didn't say it was a female hooker. You assumed it was.
Exactly.
Yeah,
I'm the sexist, misogynistic,
cisgendered scum me.
Shitlord.
Fuck.
Check your privilege, and I'll check mine for telling you to check yours. Frank heard me say it. He's got to check his, too.
I have the ultimate privilege. I have the on-air button.
That's true. You do. You do have that button.
Oh, great. A straight white male with a voice in the media. Check your privilege.
Oh, so Matt got himself into a little bit of a pissing contest this week.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. Oh, yeah. So, oh, I didn't know that was a cue.
That was we need something to talk about, Matt.
Oh, yeah. So basically, there's this... there was a...
What's the microphone for? It's a prop.
It's a prop. Duh. I don't...
Don't look at me, man. I tried to ignite some kind of show prep. He went off to play magic. Although I did message him last minute telling him we needed a woman.
Yeah. So anyway...
Wait, you called him when you wanted a woman? I guess that makes
find
sense.
Find somebody to volunteer to speak on the microphone for 10 minutes.
Yeah.
Anyway, go ahead.
But yeah, anyway, there was a video that Pete linked me to on YouTube, which kind of laid out all of the reasons on why feminists and the concept of male privilege is not, it does not fucking exist. And I started posting some of the cool, the ones that kind of nailed me to the wall, which was, one of them was the concept of
sperm theft.
Yeah, sperm theft. There's an actual fucking term called sperm jacking. This is,
I'm sure people at home get the idea, too.
Yeah.
You can actually have your jizz stolen.
Yeah. And you are always responsible for it at any point in time. If a woman...
U.S. federal courts have upheld.
Yeah.
Men are responsible for keeping track of their sperm.
At all points in time. Like, you can straight out have your shit stolen, and the woman inseminate themselves, and then you are responsible... For the kid that results.
Ah, the turkey baster defense.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's
oh,
not
yeah.
even a defense. It's a real thing. Yeah. It's happened before.
Yeah.
Okay, 5 times in all human history. It still fucking happened.
Yeah.
And the times it's happened, it's like, nah, it's your fault. You jizzed. Oh. Fuck me for having an orgasm, I guess.
And one of the best parts about this guy's argument was when he said, a woman, also their vagina also lubricates themselves. That's not a sign of fucking consent. An erection is not a sign of fucking consent.
Yeah. When women are being raped, they can get sexually stimulated. That doesn't mean that they were consenting to it.
Yeah.
Yep.
The same way that if a man gets an erection and he reaches climax, doesn't mean it was a consensual climax.
Yeah.
And the courts have upheld this, but anytime if a guy basically got a boner during sex, he wasn't raped.
Yeah.
So put that in perspective. You got male raped, like somebody put something in your butt, and you managed to get stimulated just enough that you reached climax. It wasn't rape. You obviously enjoyed it.
You were asking for it at that point in time.
Yeah, you were dressed.
It was the way he was dressed.
Not going to walk around with assless chaps.
I love spinning that logic back on itself. And it's like, these are the things that you're fucking saying, right? And it's like, when we take it and twist it around, it's like, okay, this is stupid. And this is, if any of this fucking happened to any other class besides single white men, everybody would be fucking outraged about it. Just completely outraged. But nope.
Yeah, he makes that point kind of frequently through the video. Yeah. He's like, again, if these statistics applied to anyone else other than men, or even sometimes specifically during the video, white men.
Yeah, here's the myths regarding male rape victims.
Mm-hmm.
Males are not vulnerable. By masculine gender socialization, it's thought that males, even the young, cannot be victims of rape, nor even that they are vulnerable. It's shameful and unmanly if a male child cries. They are strong and can protect themselves.
Mm-hmm.
But people seem to forget that young boys are weaker and vulnerable to their perpetrators, who are stronger and have more knowledge.
Right.
The perpetrator can use whatever they have to abuse the child, including money or other bribes. An adult male may also be helpless to fight back or fearful of doing so. Males always want sex.
Yes. That's the one that I hate the most. I actually got nailed by one of the people that I was arguing with on this. Yeah.
Phrasing.
I don't care.
Are we not doing phrasing anymore?
I guess not. But I was hit. One of the people that I was talking to on the middle of this discussion brought up the fact that.
Not even the middle. The opening reply.
Yeah, it was the opening reply to that, yeah. And.
Immediately said, of all the subjects out there to talk about, this is the one you choose.
Yes. And.
Don't you. Aren't you single?
Yes.
If the answer to the first question is yes, then it'll explain both answers.
Yeah. That was the statement that the guy said. Yeah.
People often think that a male must be aroused if he gets an erection or has an orgasm. And so that means that they are willing and enjoying any sexual act. Roy J. Levin and Willie Van Berlo wrote in an article in the Journal of Clinical Forensic Medicine that slight genital stimulation or stress can create erections, even though no specific sexual stimulation is present. An erection does not mean that the man consented to sex. Males can get erections even in traumatic or painful sexual situations, and this does not consent sex. Much like female erectile response, male erectile response is involuntary, meaning that a man need not be aroused for his penis to become erect. Mechanical stimulation is all that is necessary.
Yeah.
Arousal and stimulation are not the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
Stimulation is a physical response to a stimulus. Men can be physically stimulated without feeling aroused and thus causing an erection. Men can be scarred and intimidated into an erection, especially
scared,
yeah. Especially if the person is older or an authority. Males are less traumatized. It is sometimes argued that males are less traumatized by the abuse experienced than females. Some advocates have claimed that males are less negatively affected, but more studies show that the long-term effects are quite damaging for either sex. Males may especially be more damaged by social stigma and disbelief of their victimization.
That's exactly what I was just going to point out.
It is noted by Dr. Yogan and Ms. Richardson that male victims tend to feel more intense anger than female victims, while both go through similar feelings of distress after rape. Fraser studied 74 male and 1,380 female rape victims. She found that the depression and hostility are more profound on male victims immediately post-rape than female victims. Trauma recovery counselor Stephanie Baird says men who experience sexual attention as children often explain it to themselves, I'm a stud, I got laid by. Baird explains that that they do this in order to feel as though they have power, mm-hmm. in some say. Carpenter finds that the male coping strategy characterized by denial and control renders them more prone to later psychiatric problems,
yeah.
and reduces the likelihood of seeking help.
Absolutely. See, absolutely.
Women actually fall subject to something called slut shaming, where if a woman is particularly promiscuous, then other women seek to judge them based on their sexual activity. Like, they're too sexually active, so other women critique them. And I had to actually explain to another woman that arguing is the wrong word. I don't know. She was there to care bear?
I guess. I don't know.
Like, that I made a reply to that guy for basically saying that shit about Matt. And she's like, well, that seemed really sarcastic. I'm like, I don't think you realize what he was doing. He was literally saying Matt doesn't have a right to an opinion unless he's getting a regular supply of vagina.
Yeah. I'm being like, held to society's response.
Not even society. It's like, if you're not getting laid, you don't have an opinion on women. So unless unless he gets in a vagina on a regular basis, he doesn't have a... Like, dude, what you just said is the most fucked up thing that anybody could say in response to a statistic.
Sexual orientation. Henry Leake, the chairman of the Survivors Organization, noted that male rape, just like female rape, has more to do with power than sexuality.
Right.
And does not only happen inside the homosexual
community. It's not gay if you're trying to teach him a lesson.
Sexual orientation is a complex issue, and the majority of male perpetrators who seek out boys are not homosexual. Male sexual assault victims often fear being seen as gay or weak, or believe that their assault may be due to their appearance being effeminate or homosexual so as to attract other males. Experts do not believe that premature sexual experience play a significant role in later sexual orientation. Research by Jane Gulligan, Judith Becker, and John Hunter state that while many perpetrators may have experienced sexual abuse of their own, most sexual assault victims will not go on to become adolescent perpetrators. But it makes for a good defense in court.
Mm-hmm. Sympathy.
And another myth, male victims are lucky.
Yeah.
This is one of the ones I have a huge... Yeah.
Ontario Coalition of Rape Crisis Centers Coordinator Nicole Peach states that male victims face hurdles like the myth that sexual violence is something the male victim wants when the perpetrator is a female.
Exactly.
In this case, people may say that the victim is lucky, characterizing the experience as a positive thing when it really is not.
Dude, she wanted the D. I didn't want her to have my D.
Which falls back to...
The first one about men wanting differences.
No, the difference in punishment of teachers that have sex with their...
With their students. Yeah.
A male teacher...
Vilified.
That has sex with a female student, or even a male student.
He got to live out a fantasy every one of us had.
A male teacher...
You know why we all had that fantasy? Because we were in puberty, and we had a female authority figure in front of us. And we found it slightly attractive. Hormones are going crazy, and she's in a position to commit. It was... Yeah, it's a minor fantasy. That's why we all share it. Doesn't mean we wanted it.
Right. Yeah.
Now, a male teacher, like you said, vilified.
Vilified. Destroyed.
Appropriately so.
Right. Vilified. Yeah, absolutely. Yes.
30 years in prison.
Throw the book at him. Fuck him.
A female teacher, on the other hand, usually...
Like, I think
probation.
I think the worst I've seen is like a couple years in prison.
Some community service, some time served, and all that other bullshit.
And like put on the sex offenders list. It's like... And that's actually something else that this guy brought up to bring up, that if male privilege actually fucking existed, don't you think it would be reverse of that, to where the men would get off real light and then the woman would be slammed?
If men controlled everything, why are the men getting punished more harshly than the women? That doesn't make any fucking sense.
Yeah. And it's like, I think it's one of those ones that it should be...
Well, these laws are relatively new. They only came in like the 50s, 60s, and 70s. Okay, that's great. Before that, if you found out a dude in the town was sleeping with like underage girls and everything, the dad just went and got the shotgun.
And shot him dead.
Beat the shit out of him. Blanket parties, fucking...
Yeah.
Even the Ku Klux Klan were actually beating the shit out of child rapists, believe it or not. Not every instance ever. But if you fucked with a Klan member's daughter...
Oh boy. Yeah.
The White Hoods came for you too.
Yeah.
Especially if they found out you had some Jew in you.
Yeah. And it always gets misconstrued for males that actually have these opinions by everyone that were misogynistic, privileged fucking pieces of shit. And that's the issue I always have with that. It's like, no, these things fucking happen to us, and society then says that, well, we have to accept it.
Carefully using that us, because now it's no longer logical. Now you're...
Yeah.
You're assuming victimhood on behalf of other victims.
I gotcha.
I'm just speaking rhetorically and philosophically, but that's the same thing that a feminist does.
That's very true.
They speak for all women. No, no, no.
No, no.
Check your brain with.
I'm sorry, I wasn't listening for the last few minutes.
No, that's fine. Because the other one that we got into was the
gender pay gap.
Yeah,
that was the other one.
That was the one that I got involved with.
Yeah,
because that's when that guy said that shit.
Yeah. Basically, it's the they pull back the studies every.
You got 30 studies saying there's a gender pay gap.
Yeah,
done by agencies with an agenda. Whereas the agencies that created laws about equal pay do a study and find, no, there's no pay gap. And people go, oh, well, that study is biased. Wait, what?
Yeah.
Well, obviously, men control the government. But...
Yeah. And...
Why, if men controlled the government, why would we allow a bill or law to pass that says you can't pay men... more than women.
You think, yeah, exactly, yeah.
Even if it's a bullshit law, why would we even let it go through?
Mm-hmm.
To appease you? No, we don't need to appease you, we control you.
Yeah.
Duh.
Yeah. I also love, like, when people say, yeah, it's a male-dominated society, and it's like...
The patriarchy.
Yeah. Then I hit them with the argument of, well, more women vote than men. So...
Consistently since the 80s.
Yeah.
It's still only 15% of the world's politicians are female. Hmm.
Yeah.
That's counting the Western world.
Yeah.
Where almost every single Western country in existence gives women the right to vote.
Yeah.
I can't even think of one that doesn't. If we could find one, that would be hilarious, but...
I don't think it exists in the
fucking
Western world.
Luxembourg or something like that. There's a population of 500,000 people. Sorry.
I don't even think that's right.
That's terrible. They're a European country, but whatever. So, no, it was the gender pay gap thing, and did I ever link you to that video? It's like, well, I'm sorry if you don't believe it exists, but it does. It's like he offers proof. Like, here's a study that shows. Well, I'm sorry if you don't believe. If it's a belief, then we have an issue, which is what I was getting to in that.
Yeah.
Like, if you're just saying that all data, no matter where it comes from, is immediately biased, then how do we prove anything, you twit?
Yeah. Here it is. And this is from Time Magazine.
Uh-huh.
A fairly liberal magazine. This is their feminist myths that will not die.
This should be good.
Number one. There's only five of them, so I shouldn't take that. Women are half the world's population, working two-thirds of the world's working hours, receive 10% of the world's income, owning less than 1% of the world's property.
Bullshit.
That was another point that guy brought up, was the within that, which was we work more overtime. Also, in that study that says that there's a gender pay gap, there was
Let them go.
All right. This injustice confection is routinely quoted by advocacy groups, the World Bank, Oxfam, and the United Nations. It is sheer fabrication. More than 15 years ago, Sussex University experts on gender and development, Sally Baden and Anne Margaret Goetz, reputed the claim. The figure was made up by someone working at the UN because it seemed to her to represent the scale of gender-based inequality at the time.
With no evidence!
But there is no evidence that it was ever accurate, and it certainly is not today.
An arbitrary number.
50% of all men are actually unicorns.
Right.
Now it's a fact.
Precise figures do not exist, but no serious economist believes women earn only 10% of the world's income or only own 1% of the property. As one critic wrote in an excellent debunking in The Atlantic, U.S. women alone earn 5.4% of world income.
Mm-hmm.
Of world income.
World income, yeah.
Moreover, in African countries where women have made far less progress than their Western and Asian counterparts, Yale economist Cheryl Doss found female land ownership ranging from 11% in Senegal to 54% in Rwanda and Burundi. Doss warns that using unsubstantiated statistics for advocacy is counterproductive. Bad data not only undermine...
And unethical.
Not only undermine credibility, they obstruct progress by making it impossible to measure things.
Right.
Myth number two.
No. Measuring things is bad. Data is biased.
Right.
Carrie, if you're listening, you're a moron. I'm sorry.
Between 100,000 and 300,000 girls are pressed into sexual slavery each year in the United States.
Oh, here we go.
This sensational claim is the favorite of politicians, celebrities, and journalists.
I fucking love it. There's just 100,000 missing women every year. They're in sex trade.
Ashton Kutcher and Demi Moore turned it into a cause célèbre. Both conservatives and liberal reformers deploy it. Former President Jimmy Carter recently said that the sexual enslavement of girls in the U.S. today is worse than in American slavery in the 19th century.
What? Hold on. I can't wrap, like, we're talking like the Civil War where there was...
Yes.
Yeah.
Old slavery. Black slavery. Black people that are slaves in the United States before the Civil War.
And there's more women enslaved now in the sex slaves.
I don't mean this sarcastically when I say, where are these cheap hookers that they keep talking about?
Yeah.
The source for the figure...
Not that I would buy them, but you don't see them. Where do they exist? Yeah.
Do they fucking live in the Metrodome or something when we're not looking? Where are they?
The source for the figure is a 2001 report on child sexual exploitation by University of Pennsylvania sociologists Rickard S. and Neil Werner. But there are 100,000 to 300,000 estimate referred to children at risk for exploitation, not actual victims. When three reporters from the Village Voice questioned Estes on the number of children who were abducted and pressed into sexual slavery each year, he replied,
"I know.
We're thinking about a few hundred people.
No, I'm okay. Thank you.
Yeah. No, I'm good, babe. So we're thinking about a few hundred people. And this number And this number is likely to include a lot of boys. According to a 2008 census of underage prostitutes in New York City, nearly half turned out to be male. A few hundred children is still a few hundred children too many, but they will not be helped by a thousandfold inflation of their numbers.
Right.
Myth number three.
Because you immediately go, how? How are there 100,000 missing kids every year? Where is the uproar?
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
There's like 15 posters at Walmart. Something's fucking wrong.
Yeah. Yeah. In the United States.
Was the kid just a twat? Is that why nobody misses him? What's...
Yeah. In the United States, 22 to 35% of women who visit hospital emergency rooms do so because of domestic violence.
Bullshit.
Well, these are myths.
I know. So yeah. I'm just...
This claim has appeared in countless fact sheets, books, and articles. For example, in the leading textbook on family violence, domestic violence law, and in the Penguin Atlas of Women in the World. The Penguin Atlas uses the emergency room figure to justify placing the U.S. on par with Uganda and Haiti for intimate violence.
To the point where they have to ask everyone, do you feel threatened or any sort of abuse in your home? For any reason.
They did that to Tink one time, right? Yeah. After she had
they did
her,
it to me when I was in there for my fucking gallbladder.
Right after she had her heart surgery. You know, she was on the Coumadin and getting the bruises.
Yeah.
The first thing they said, I walked out to have a cigarette.
Yeah.
As soon as I left the room, they said, is he beating you? Yeah.
Yeah, that I hate, like... I've gone in there for, like, stitches and stuff like that, and I'm like, I have to have this conversation with my mom.
I'm tipping my finger, like, do you feel threatened right now?
From what? From literally, like, I broke my fucking arm, man! Like, I...
Yeah. What's the provenance? The Atlas purports no primary source, but the editor of Domestic Violence Law cites a 1997 Justice Department study, as well as a 2009 post on the Centers for Disease Control's website, but the Justice Department and the CDC are not referring to the 40 million women who annually visit emergency rooms, but to women numbering about 550,000 annually who come to emergency rooms for violence-related injuries. Of these, approximately 37% were attacked by intimates. So it's not the case that 22 to 35% of women who visit emergency rooms are there for domestic violence. The correct figure is less than 0.5%.
Right. So they're picking the fact that out of the percentage of people that go to the emergency room, we then look at this number here that says 37% of those people that went to this emergency room are this. I fucking hate that shit. I hate that shit so much.
Myth number four, 1 in 5 college women will be sexually assaulted.
Ooh. I'll keep track of.
What do you mean you'll keep track of?
I always get this argument and I don't know how to fight back against it.
This incendiary figure is everywhere in the media today. Journalists, senators, and even President Obama cite it routinely. Can it be true that the American college campus is one of the most dangerous places on earth for
women? When was this article written? Just curious.
Because
the number continually changes.
September 2nd, 2014.
The last time I heard it a month or two ago was 1 in 3.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The 1 in 5 figure is based on the campus sexuality or sexual assault study.
Quick pause. This is the one John Day linked me to when we were having the nail polish roofie detector debate. Yeah.
Commissioned by the National Institute of Justice and conducted from 2005 to 2007. Two prominent criminologists, Northwestern University's James Allen Fox and Mount Holyoke. Holyoke College's Richard Moran.
That's not a real college.
Moran. have noticed is that the estimated 19% sexual assault rate among college women is based on a survey at two large four-year universities, which might not accurately reflect our nation's colleges overall. In addition, the survey had a large non-response rate, with the clear possibility that those who had been victimized were more apt to have completed the questionnaire, resulting in inflated prevalence figure. Fox Moran also pointed out that the study used an overly broad definition of sexual assault. Respondents were counted as sexual assault victims if they had been subject to, quote, attempted forced kissing or engaged in intimate encounters while intoxicated.
So removing the intoxicated thing, that's a whole nother debate. The forced kissing for Matt in this study is literally
attempted forced kissing.
Yeah, it's
okay. Attempted forced kissing. You're talking to a chick at a party. She's flirting. She puts your hand on her, and you try to kiss her.
That's right.
And she didn't want to be kissed that second.
Yeah, that's sexual assault.
That was sexual assault in that study.
No.
Like, you being confused. Like, you got a signal that she wanted you to kiss, and you wanted to kiss. You went in. She's like, oh, no, thank you. I have a boyfriend or anything like that. You're like, oh, I'm sorry. And then, you know, you're embarrassed, and you politely exclude yourself from an embarrassing situation or anything like that. Rape.
And you move on.
Rape.
Yeah.
Defenders of the 1 in 5 figure will apply that the findings have been replicated by other studies. But these studies suffer from the same or all of the same flaws. Campus sexual assault is a serious problem and will not be solved by statistical hijinks.
Mm-hmm. The actual number is like other studies that used large sample sizes and included the non-response and the negative response in their results found it to be closer to possibly 1 in 16, 1 in 20. Which now, is still retardedly high.
Yes.
And despicable when you think about it, but that's in situations, again, including intoxicated sex.
Yeah.
Removing that, the number drops down to maybe 1 in 100.
Okay.
So 1 in 100 women might be sexually assaulted. They're the when you're
not 33 fucking percent.
Yeah. or even 20% or anything like that. Like, literally, like, how did nobody ever hear of this before? If you were raped, and then it's like, oh, well, they used a really broad definition. That's your response. Christina Hoff Sommers, one of the most prominent feminists ever, is one of the hugest people that actually goes against that figure. And, like, you are diminishing the victims of sexual assault and rape by this study.
Yeah.
You really are. Attempted forced kissing is not the same as forced penetration or anything like that.
Yeah. Myth number 5. Women earn 77 cents for every dollar a man earns.
Here it is.
For doing the same work.
Yep.
No matter how many times this wage gap claim is decisively refuted by economists, it always comes back. The bottom line is the 23 cent gender pay gap is simply the difference between the average earnings of all men and women working full time.
Yep.
It does not account for differences in occupations, positions, education, job tenure, or hours worked per week.
Or maternity leave.
When such relevant factors are considered, the pay gap narrows to the point of vanishing.
Yeah,
or part-time employment.
Or part-time employment.
Well, that's what it says, hours per week.
Yeah.
Wage gap activists say women with identical backgrounds and jobs as men still earn less, but they always fail to take into account critical variables. Activist groups like the National Organization for Women have a fallback position that women's education and career choices are not truly free. They are driven by powerful sexist stereotypes. In this view, women's tendency to retreat from the workplace to raise children or to enter fields like early childhood education and psychology rather than better paying professions like petroleum engineering
out of the STEM fields,
is evidence of continued social coercion. Here is the problem. American women are among the best informed and most self-determined human beings in the world. To say that they are manipulated into their life choices by forces beyond their control is divorcing from reality and demeaning to boot.
Or which is it? Is there a pay gap or are they being forced to possess professions that pay less by nature? What is it?
Pick one.
Pick one. You can't have fucking both.
Why do these ridiculous claims have so much appeal and staying power? For one thing, there's a lot of statistical illiteracy among journalists, feminist academics, and political leaders. There is also an admirable human tendency to be protective of women. Stories of female exploitation are readily believed, and vocal skeptics risk appearing indifferent to women's suffering. Finally, armies of advocates depend on killer stats to galvanize their causes.
Mm-hmm.
But killer stats obliterate distinctions between more and less serious problems and send scarce resources in the wrong direction. They also promote bigotry. The idea that American men are annually enslaving more than 100,000 girls, sending millions of women to emergency rooms, sustaining a rape culture, and cheating women out of their rightful salary creates rancor in true believers and disdain in those whom would otherwise be sympathetic allies.
It's called misandry. Yeah.
And just so you know, this was written by Christina Hoff Summers.
Ah! Base mom strikes again!
A former philosophy professor is a resident scholar at the American Enterprise Institute. She's the author of several books, including Who Stole Feminism and The War Against Boys, and is the host of a weekly video blog, The Factual Feminist.
You know, what's funny is, like, they make it sound like all she does is write books about the troubles plaguing men. She does a lot about feminism, too. She's maybe wrote two or three things about books that are, quote, negative critiquing feminism, and the rest are all feminism is a good thing. We need feminism. But anytime you talk about any of the statistics that CHS has brought up, feminists literally just, here's the bus, right underneath. Like, oh, well, she's not a real fem. Fuck it. God dang it. So she's super educated. She's been a feminist for so long, and now she's saying, wait, something's really happened to this movement. We've turned into a bunch of jerks. No, you're wrong. Okay.
Oh, okay, I guess the fact that I've been doing this forever doesn't count towards anything. No, it doesn't. Get the fuck out. There's a really
good pay gap joke, and it actually came from Dilbert, where, like, the woman in the office comes up to Wally, and she's like, you know what? I just read this study that said that women get paid 75 cents to every dollar that a man makes. That's 25% more. And he goes, actually, that's 33% more. I suppose you're not going to compliment me on my math skills now, are you?
Boom! Burn! I love, that's one of my favorite.
Actually, that's 33% more, 25% less. Math. It's fun.
And even, and another point that this guy brought up in this video, which was the fact that there is apparent rampant sexism in the STEM fields, right? Which is science, technology, economics, and what's the M?
Mathematics.
You swing it either way. Technically, yeah. M could be
medicine or machine.
All four of the letters already have mathematics as a base, so yeah. It always makes me weirded out when they put M in there.
Mm-hmm.
I guess it's to include economists, but
yeah,
you're basically a statistician, which is a form of a science or engineer anyway.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
You engineer numbers.
Yeah, and there was a study that was done for, like, the HR hiring people from these companies, and it was found out, completely independent study, and it was found out that the people that would hire these people into these jobs preferred female applicants on a 2-to-1 ratio.
Yeah, they sent in men and women with the exact same qualifications, and in all but the economics field, women perceived 9 times out of 10 preferential hiring.
Yeah.
The economics field, it was like, you know, 5 times out of 10, about 50-50, because for some reason economists didn't want women doing math. Sexist, I don't know, but it's really weird that in 4 different fields they had one. That was the control, I guess?
I guess, yeah.
I don't know, I just work here.
What? Was it Stephen Molyneux or something like that?
Yeah.
If you guys get a chance, you actually should look the video up. It's about 1.5 hours long. It's very informative. And unfortunately,
you know, the one that actually pissed me off the most, that I can't believe you didn't jump all over, was the domestic abuse one.
Oh, no! No, I was just
Frank, this was great, because they actually did a study where they had men call abuse hotlines,
right?
And, like, there's various percentages, so don't ask me, but most of the time the men were given a phone number to call, and it directed to a abuser hotline.
If you
how to stop beating your wife.
Yeah. Or they were made fun of when they, because basically, my wife's beating my ass, I need help. Well,
Like, there's sometimes they did live hot calls. Like, she's coming at me with a frying pan, and I don't know what to do. I called the cops, and they're not saying anything. What do I do? And they're like,
you're not being abused.
You're not actually being abused.
Well, here's the phone number for an abuse stop. Like an abuser.
Stop males abusing women.
Yeah.
Hotline.
Here, they'll help you. Or they just straight out gave them the phone number.
And didn't tell them what it was for.
And they
called it, and it was that.
Yeah.
They got the ghost numbers. I'm going to give you a number you need to call about this. Okay. And then you call. It's like, hi, welcome to stopbeatingyourwife.org. What?
What?
It's freaking ridiculous.
Yeah, no, that was the... I was just completely flabbergasted about that one. I just didn't know what... I was like, fuck this. This is ridiculous. The fact that it exists... Yeah. I was just like, oh my God. I didn't even think... Yeah. What was another one that was...
I don't care, you know, really what size the woman is unless she's ridiculously like a midget little person. 110-pound woman with a baseball bat is still somebody with a fucking baseball bat.
Right. They can get a good...
You can still get your ass beat by a woman with a baseball bat.
Yeah. Yeah.
Especially if she gets the drop on you.
Yeah,
you're absolutely sitting there in your Cheerios after a fight. She comes up and... Right in the back of the neck.
Also, in one of those studies they did, they found out that that women are about as aggressive as men in those situations. That it's not like we're primarily...
Actually, they found in cases of women performing domestic abuse, they were more aggressive than men.
Yeah.
They were actually breaking bones. They were actually lacerating flesh and causing wounds with knives and stuff. In most of the cases where men were abusing their wives, it was bruises, you know, some broken bones, sprains and stuff. And that's not minimizing it and say, oh, well, they should just get over it. What?
No, just listening.
Oh, it was they found that the women were using implements to cause more harm.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
So the old typical frying pan.
Yeah,
or grab
the rolling pin, the knife, the baseball bat, the golf
club. The frozen fucking turkey out of the fridge, beat the shit out of him, yeah. Grab the goddamn oranges, though it doesn't leave bruises. That type of shit.
Bag of sweet ones of oranges.
Yep.
You get a good swing, they don't leave a bruise, and after you get done, you get a fresh glass of OJ. Thanks, Bing Crosby. No, it's...
And we're not even going to touch in the family court system. So that's
he compiled it all into a 1.5-hour presentation on YouTube that I listened to in the background while I was doing other shit, and linked sources to all these studies, multiple sources, studies confirming each other or independent studies conducted years apart that confirm the same statistics. He had all of this. He had all of this, and somebody jumps into the middle of that pay gap thing with, well, any data produced by anybody is going to be biased to their agenda.
Right.
It's peer... That's the whole concept of peer reviewing.
Yeah. 100% of the coolest people on the planet listen to this show.
Right, yeah. That's a fact now because we said it. It's a fact.
Yeah.
I can just make shit up, too. I love it. I can make shit up, like... As I've said before, I'm the greatest.
She's saying the opposite. She's saying all data is fabricated.
Yeah.
Or subject to bias before it's produced.
Yeah.
Fuck you. Then all the data you have.
Yeah.
Well, I am not arguing that. I'm saying both people are victimized. So why live in a culture of victimhood?
Right. Right.
Yeah.
Oh, the one that, and another one point that pissed me off was the whole child support thing. Did Frank say that? No, yeah, I got you. The child support thing when you can absolutely prove
that the child is not yours. You no longer have to pay child support, Frank. But...
I don't because you turned 18.
No. So you're paying child... She says the kid's yours and you contest that in court and the trial takes a year. The entire time the trial is going on, you are accruing child support debt. At the end of the trial, the paternity trial, it is revealed that the child is not yours. But thanks to the Bradley Act, you still have to pay that year of child support.
Yep.
It cannot be forgiven or diminished by any means.
Right.
If you had lost your job in the middle of that, it cannot be adjusted.
Which was a point that he brought up, is like it incentivizes women to pick the most financially well-off man and say, that guy's the baby's dad right yeah. there. And it's like, that's not right. That's not fair.
Which
that's,
was hilarious when he brought up the study about soldiers.
Yeah.
The reservists and stuff that get called up to go into Iraq and Afghanistan and everything that had been working a full-time job that paid 50, 60K a year, something like that. Then they go on their active duty pay, and it's definitely not as much as that.
Yeah.
Their child support rate stays the same as their civilian job, and it cannot be adjusted.
They can file the paperwork, but that's going to be way after they get called back to active service and go through, and they're still accruing.
It's
going to
take years.
Yeah.
And it's still accruing.
Yeah.
So they're on a reduced salary, but the child support rate isn't being changed because it takes years to get anybody to even look at the paperwork.
Yeah.
Like, hey, yeah, I'm making way less money now, and, you know, I given $800 of my money on a military salary.
No, the courts love it when the person that has to pay child support is in the military because it's an automatic deduction.
Yeah. Yeah.
That was the other thing you brought up. It's coming right out of their paycheck. So they're overseas fighting for freedom and everything, and half of their pay is going to their child, which I guess is good in a way, now, but it's like it's not being adjusted, so that guy's screwed.
Now, we're not saying
he's going into debt to fight a war because he had a kid with a woman that divorced him, or he divorced her.
Now, wait, we're not saying that child support's not a good thing. It's just it's draconic, the laws and the immovability and the concept of,
and maybe not legally verbiage wise structured to favor women, but in practice it does.
It does, yeah,
because the statistics show that women have been favored in paternity suits and all these other custody battles, child support cases, and everything else. 90% of the time, the women get a result in their favor.
Yeah.
How is that a statistic? How is that a real statistic?
And another one of my...
90% of all men are just horrible? Wow.
I also love the
well, you see, men have to work, so they won't be able to give their full undivided attention to the child and blah, blah, blah. And
right, which then we also bring up
like another... Like a single mother isn't going to have to work. You know?
Right, yeah. Then we also bring up another thing that he brought up, which was the parental and... what is it? Custody. The custody of the children is awarded to... I think it was like 18%.
Is awarded to men,
and 82% is just of the 18%, a vast majority of that was that women didn't show up in court. So it's like
they won by default.
It
was uncontested.
Yeah,
and it was uncontested. It immediately goes to them.
Yeah,
but every other time that a woman shows up, she gets the kids.
Yeah, even
wow.
That was the one I was like, are you going to tell me that 82% of women prove that they were the better parent? I don't think that's true. There's no way that's possible.
In a system of male privilege.
Yeah.
In a system of patriarchy.
Yeah.
You're telling me that in a system where men control everything, we're the worst possible candidates to be parents? That seems weird.
It's not true.
That seems think that weird.
You would think that we would say that we are. And then fuck the women. But that's, yeah. It's, the numbers are fucking staggering.
Which they could be designed to be, but even if you 50% it between the two studies contradicting each other, mm-hmm. You're still left with staggering statistics against men.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah. I was like, Jesus.
But you're an asshole if you bring any of it up.
Right. Exactly. And that's all. Yeah, you are a cisgendered, misogynistic, fucking patriarchy.
Or you're lying. Or you're just wrong.
Yeah.
There's no in-betweens.
Yeah.
There's no way your data could ever be right.
Well, you can just look at TV and see how people think about men nowadays. Look at how fathers are portrayed.
Right, which is something else that he
fucking idiots.
Yeah.
He brought up
with a hot-ass wife, and if you ever left her, he's a dumbass. Wait, what?
What if she beats him under his clothes all the time, and he's just supposed to sit there and take it, I guess? I don't know. I know, that's a... Yeah.
Here is the statement that caused me the most confusion, and I actually had to link the scene from Billy Madison. And as a person who seems really aware of himself politically, and philosophically to some degree, and everything, I want you to hear this sentence in regards to equality and analyze it yourself.
everyone deserves equality that will work for it.
Yep.
Okay.
If that statement is 100% plausibly enforced, then that means that only Rosa Parks gets to sit on the front of the bus. No other black people. Only Martin Luther King Jr. can have his kids play with a white kid. That's not equality. Not even by any stretch. What you're saying is you want a meritocratic egalitarian system. Well,
people, the problem now is that people assume that equality means that everybody has to have the same thing. Equality means that everybody is afforded the opportunity to get the same thing.
Right.
There's a difference.
There is. Which was the irony of me and Matt bringing up these statistics and then her saying those statistics are wrong and then saying we should only get equality if we fight for it or work for it or aware of it.
Yeah.
Wait a minute. How can we be aware of inequality if all the data we present is null and void?
Yeah.
Then you're left purely with personal experience, and then your system really does come into play.
Yeah.
Only if you stand up and fight in court will you be granted the same rights as another person.
Well, you see, that's the problem with all of these kind of arguments. You know, even, you know, beyond feminism, one side, I'll call it the intelligent side,
mm-hmm.
wants to use facts and figures
and reason and logic.
The other side, which I'll call the emotional side,
yeah.
wants to use emotion,
yeah.
obviously.
Yeah. Things that don't make fucking sense and can't be quantified.
Right. I summed it up to the rationals and the ideologues.
Yeah, I'd say that's a good way to put it.
Facts and figures are all well and good until they don't meet with what you want to say. And then
you have to either adjust the figures or ignore them. Or ignore them or say that the person that made them is wrong.
Yeah.
And it's like, that's not true. There's no way that's fucking true. Period.
I believe that equality is given to those people that work for it.
That's fucking stupid.
Everyone in this room is now dumber for having listened to that statement.
Yeah, yeah exactly. Yeah.
God. Every single...
All you had to do is take out one letter, change it to equity.
Yeah.
Everyone deserves equity that is willing to work
for. Yeah.
Oh, well, you're talking about monetary equity. Yeah, that's
well,
fine.
Yeah, by that standard, all of the slaves in the 19th century that stayed on the farm until the end of the Civil War
didn't deserve
to be freed.
Yeah. Yes.
Now you're seeing the irony of that statement.
Yeah.
Now it's starting to sink in.
Yeah. Yeah, using your logic...
Which I told that person, that is such a vanilla statement. It sounds so bland and so harmless and so full of such ideology that no one could disagree with it until you take 5 fucking seconds to think about it.
Yeah.
And then you realize it's pure dribble.
I'm glad we stayed on I'm glad we stayed on a nuclear topic.
We got the funny out of the way first.
Yeah, because if anybody's listening to this, they're just going, oh, shit.
Oh, great. It's the He-Man Woman Haters fan club.
No, not at all. That's not the way this is. This has always been one of those situations. It's like, these are things that upset me. And it's like, I hate
it. It falls back to what we were talking about a couple of months ago on race.
Yeah.
We're being accused of that which we're not.
Right, and it fucking pisses me off. It's like we're using logic and reason and things that reasonable people.
Imagine the average stupid person.
Yeah, and then realize that there's people that are dumber than that.
The other half are dumber than that.
Yeah. Blows my fucking mind. That was one of the most profound statements I ever had said to me, and I was like...
From George Carlin?
Yeah. And I was like, fuck me, that's... Brilliant, George. Fucking brilliant, George. I love it.
Or when somebody mentioned like ancient Mesopotamia, like the Euphrates and Tigris, and how the only thing that went on to attack the concept of wealth, greed, and money and stuff. And I kind of wanted to get away from that because that was the whole point of it, was the gender pay gap. Was being motivated by greed. I must have as much as everyone else or it's inequality, period. And somebody, I think she agreed with him or said something about I miss working with you or something.
Yeah,
and then I'm like, well, actually, you know, there's evidence in Mesopotamia that, you know, and even ancient civilizations going back to caveman days that
men worshipped women.
Right.
On the cave paintings, you got dudes hunting buffaloes, buffaloes, and drawings of the female form, which is either porn...
or that which we need the most in our life.
Yeah.
One
man need to eat, need children.
Yeah.
One man can fertilize women.
Period. Yeah.
So these things that can produce life, more of us come out of that thing, is sacred.
That logic makes sense to me.
Over 20, 30, 40,000 years, eventually it turns into, no. The men will go out and get goods. You stay safe. And men can't quantify why they feel that way.
Because
it was pure instinct.
Yeah.
No, there's no common sense to keeping... There's the planet's nearly overpopulated as it is, but...
Yeah.
But to say it's just outright hatred... No, it's not hatred. If anything, it's profound respect and worship of your ability to create life. Just transferred into a modern human that can't quite quantify it. But that fact came from anthropologists and people that studied ancient history. And as we know, data and facts are irrelevant.
Right?
I'm not going to let this debate be dictated by facts.
Oh, I'm out. Man.
Could have gone totally metaphysical on her. I'm like, okay, does the universe exist? Where's our starting point for data that we can assume is unbiased? Does the universe exist?
Starting point for data starts with her.
Apparently. She wasn't even arguing against what we were saying. She was just saying, well, that's all well and good, but everybody's a victim.
That doesn't... Who lives in that world? Right?
It's like you should have a little, like... digital display on your chest of how much a victim you've been made today, and other people have to regulate their behavior towards you based on that.
Not
meter.
On your chest, on your forehead.
Yeah, you can't put it on her chest because then you'll get accused of staring at her tits.
Yeah.
If they're sexual objects, if they're not sexual objects, then why is it sexual assault?
We'll call it a victometer.
Yep.
It'll go from one side of the forehead to the other.
Yep. Like a battery level.
Except in Arabic countries where it'll go the other side of the other for some reason. Yeah. The language is hilarious. Just one day we decided, well, let's go the other direction. We're better than that.
Let's make a bunch of squiggly lines and call them words. I had that same problem in Japan.
Really?
Yeah. I'm like, how is this a language?
I gotcha.
Just the caveman, the cave woman. I don't care, but what's that symbol mean? That's the sound for buh.
Yeah,
that means buh. Yeah. What?
And this is huh?
And it happened relatively recently. It was like 10,000 years ago.
That's basically what, you know, the Chinese and Japanese language is basically a diversion of hieroglyphics, I think.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. It was.
You're like, okay, what does three squiggly lines and a dot mean? Well. Are the three squiggly lines going to the left or to the right? And is the dot over the middle or what? It's bad enough. Like when you see pictures of Tokyo and you see the big Coke sign and it's got the squiggly shit on it. You ever seen a fucking Japanese newspaper?
Oh, it's the same thing. Yeah.
Yeah. And on top of that, they're even worse. You don't read left or right in Japanese. You read down.
You read straight down. That's why I like Google Translate, because Google Translate takes that. And I'm not trying to bash on the Japanese language or anything like that. It's just, it's one of those ones, it doesn't make sense.
No.
It doesn't make fucking sense.
It doesn't. And I mean, I lived there for a year, and I could never...
Read it?
I think we've talked about this before. The lion eating the poet in the stone den.
Huh?
It's a Chinese poem that is literally pronounced one way. And it's literally just she, it's over and over again. And it's a poem that verbally is the exact same sound over and over again, but the inflection and order and pauses you put into it mean something completely different. Okay. And the name of the poem is The Lion Eating the Poet in the Stone Den.
Yeah. See, I think even the Japanese couldn't really read their language too well. Because you go into any fast food restaurant and they had pictures of the food. On the menu.
Nice.
So you could literally go
in. This is gibberish. It's written in Kyoto.
Yeah, I mean,
I don't know where that is.
I mean, I don't know how many times I went into like their version of a McDonald's and just looked at the menu that they had. You know, they had the menu up here, but they also had a menu taped to the floor. Exactly. Exactly. You could just see a picture of a cheeseburger and go.
Yeah.
And she'd go, yeah,
not my fault. He ordered a shitty beef and I give him the shitty chicken, but he said he ordered a shitty shrimp.
Yeah. And then, you know, she'd punch it in. Now their numbers are the same.
Yeah.
So that helps.
Thank you, Arabic.
Right. So, you know, she'd punch into her little register there and it would come up and say, your dinner is going to cost 850 yen. All right.
That's about $350.
Well, no. $350.
No, if you're out in town, you had yen. They didn't,
oh, yeah. You know. Oh, I know.
You know, so I can't. So I
50,000 yen. It's like $5. Oh.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's pretty much a yen to a penny, give or take.
That's what I figured, yeah.
So, of course, it depends on what time you're there, too. You know, depending on the exchange rate.
Mm-hmm.
The exchange rate sucked when I was there. But it helped. I got like an extra $400 a month in pay for the cost of living adjustment.
Nice.
Just don't go out in town and you're fine because the prices on post are. I was paying $8 for a carton of Marlboros, you know? So.
Yeah, nice.
Sold. Right. So
That's why, man,
it was still a dollar for a beer at the E Club, but if you go out in town, it was $5 for a beer.
Yeah. That's
the only time I went out in town and got a beer is if I wanted a Japanese beer.
Yeah.
You know?
The sake bomb.
Yeah. I mean, I could go to the package store and get a case of Bud for
$10, $5.
Maybe, something. Yeah, $5-6.
Yeah.
Of course, these were the old style cases, too, where it looked like the Aldi's box, which is the beer sitting in it.
Yeah. You know,
it says beer on the side.
Yeah. No, I mean, it was just a, you know, instead of a case with the handle and all kind of stuff, it was just flat. It was a flat, you know.
With the fucking six packs jammed into it. Yeah.
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 But it was beer. It was cheap. Of course, yeah. You know, Marines overseas, single living in the barracks every weekend.
Trashed out of your fucking mind.
like four guys would buy a beer.
Yeah. And it'd be gone by Sunday afternoon.
And everybody else would just walk around the barracks, you know, popping their head in the door. Hey, you got a beer? You know?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And the next weekend, another four guys would buy a beer.
Yep. You know, Whoever wasn't broke.
Right. Well, it wasn't completely uncommon to get paid on Friday and be broke on Monday, you know.
I know that. Yeah, I've done that before.
Oh, the rock star weekends.
Yeah, but the difference is when you do it in the military, you can still eat.
Yeah, because they'll still feed you. Yeah.
They'll still feed you.
Yeah, that was a point that one of my friends who was in the Air Force brought up. He's like, he was saying one of the times when, like, he'd come home and whatnot, he was always being the one that would drive around and whatnot and not drive around because he's like, hey, I get paid by the military. I don't have any bills besides my entertainment.
Yeah. Yeah. Like living in Southern California, let's see, what did I have for bills? Let's see, I had a phone line in my dorm room or in my barracks room, which cost $8 a month.
Mm-hmm.
And I had cable.
Yeah.
Which cost $10 a month.
Yeah.
And that was it.
Yeah.
I didn't have a car.
Nope. Didn't need one.
No. Somebody had a car.
Yeah, yeah. Someone had a car.
Can you imagine 14 Marines piled into a Honda Civic going?
Yeah, you know? Yeah. That's when you get the, that's when one of you,
this is the fun V.
Let me take that back. I had a car, but it was a junker car. I mean, when I went to Japan, we had hand-me-down cars.
Yeah.
Because most of us were only stationed there for a year at a time.
Yeah.
So you'd get there, and somebody would be leaving, and you'd buy their car for like $500.
Yeah.
And then when you left in a year, you'd sell your car for $500. So yep. It was the same car. It was like a 20-year-old car, you know. And then the price would go up on the years that the inspection was due. Because they have a pretty hardcore inspection.
Yeah.
And that's really what the $500 for is. You weren't paying for the car, you were paying for the inspection.
Yeah.
You know, every 2 years they had to have an inspection, and like if you had to have a windshield wiper replaced, it would cost like $500, you know.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Anyway, we're coming to the end of the show. We've got about 45 seconds left, so thanks for listening to us on themix.fm, The Mix Talk.
Yeah.
We'll be back next week, unless Matt's going to Chicago and forgot to tell me.
No, not that I'm aware of. I don't have any out of plan trip for the rest of the year.
And Pete's got dinner cooking up on the stove, or simmering up on the stove, I guess, and a round cornbread. That's going to be interesting to see.
It's
you
like
you're going to hang out for dinner?
Oh, yeah.
You get a square pan, I'll make square cornbread.
Man,
other than that, we'll be back 5 to 8 p.m. Central Time on themix.fm. Just look for the talk channel or find us at radiofubar.com.